This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
TSN 1290 and Robertson College present the return of the 10K Summer Selfie. We have $10,000 in cash prizes to award to select selfie takers across Manitoba, and you could be one of the recipients. To enter, take a really good selfie at some point during the summer and post it before Thursday, August 31st to Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram using the hashtag 10K Summer Selfie. Show us an amazing photo or take a themed selfie in one of the five bonus categories. Your picture could be worth at least $1,000. Our favorite picks in each of the below categories I will mention will be selected and revealed Thursday, September 5th. Keep your phone charged and be ready to capture the best that summer 2017 has to offer. Here are the selfies we're looking for. Selfie of the Summer is presented by Robertson College. That's worth $5,000. Then the best animal selfie presented by Assiniboia Park Zoo is worth a K. Best food and drink selfie presented by Booster Juice is worth another K. Best hair selfie presented by Aura Hair Group is worth $1,000 as well. Best outdoor selfie presented by Lacoste Garden Center is worth $1,000. And best smile selfie presented by Toddlers to Teens is another $1,000 prize. For more information, visit TSN1290.ca. Jim Tulth, Troy Wester, Brandon Rewicki, 35 minutes past the opening hour on the Big Show. Did you guys take a selfie at the golf course yesterday?
No, not much of a selfie, dude.
You didn't sneak in behind him when he was at 9 or 10 and just on his way to 11 go?
No. That's how you get a pitching wedge in the teeth right there.
That's an offense that will get you off the course.
Back like 20 years ago, I would have been real mad after that. It doesn't mean anything really to me. I've taken my fair share of 10s and 11s, man. I've taken 14s. Yeah.
I've done the tin cup a couple times. Ken Weeb offers balls, which, again, as you said, Brandon, you just be quiet.
Yeah,
I appreciate the gesture. And he says, we could drop Jimbo. And I'm like, just give me another ball. He goes, well, here, I'll give you another one. I'm like, just silence, please.
Yes, yeah.
I appreciate the gesture. It's very nice.
I find the water, hitting it into the water for me doesn't get me as mad as like duffing a shot.
I agree.
Oh, like that, that
one,
like that, yeah, is that's when the rage comes out. But yeah, the water, like you're kind of meh.
I agree with that. Yeah, the water. You went for it. You tried. Kind of made a nice sound. Whatever. You know. And we're at an age now where we can afford balls, not like 20 years ago, like you said, Westwood. But the short, the 20-foot chip that goes 2 feet is. Yeah. Those are the strokes that
there's a level of gutlessness to this that no one wants to be associated with.
Oh, you coward pitching wedge. We'll talk more about the Stanley Cup Final coming up as well, and lots on the Bombers as they get ready for the first preseason game. But Brian Burke, the president of hockey operations for the Calgary Flames, was speaking at the Canadian Club in Calgary yesterday and got into it with one of the people in the audience about the new arena. Of course, Calgary trying to get a new arena, or the Flames are anyways, and City Council deciding there will be no public money going towards this. So Ken King a while ago said, excuse me, my allergies are acting up. Ken King a while ago said that they wouldn't, you know, sort of announce it, or they would just move if they don't get an arena. And a member of the audience questioned Brian Burke on this. Here's the exchange yesterday from Brian Burke, president of hockey operations for the Calgary Flames.
What Ken King said was, we're not going to make a threat to move. We're just going to move if we don't get the deal we need. And you're saying that's fine.
No, I'm not saying that it's fine.
Well, you just said Murray Edwards should pay for the building himself. The math works fine. They figured it out in Edmonton, but we're smarter here. They figured out public money is useful toward rejuvenating downtown and making a statement and keeping jobs. But we're smarter than that here. They figured it out in Manitoba, but we're smarter in Alberta. No, it's not just my view on this. Taxpayers all over Canada have figured this out. Municipalities all over Canada have figured this out. Most intelligent people get this. Sorry with my learned friend. I think most people get this.
And what the person in the audience said there at the end was, most intelligent people know how to tie a tie, as Brian Burke was there once again with the tie not done up around his neck. What do you think of that exchange and the whole idea that, I mean, with Brian Burke, you're going to get the sarcasm and the insults of most intelligent people, this and that. But what do you think of the general message there that look at Edmonton, look at here in Winnipeg, what the building, what the team has done for the economy and taxes and all that stuff. And I know the team makes millions. But what do you think of that overall sentiment from Berg and the exchange?
It's a real interesting study, and I don't know. I'm completely ignorant of the numbers involved, for instance, locally here at the MTS Center, and the spin-off positive effects and ramifications, right, with jobs being created, how the MTS Center, how to the degree that the downtown area has been salvaged or rejuvenated, it's played a massive role to whatever degree that has occurred. So to try and measure all the spin-off benefits, not to mention the tangible employment and concerts coming in that never would have come in, all those sorts of things that occur because of that. And there was all kinds, locally here, there's all kinds of opposition to public monies being utilized. And typically, of course, you're going to get that anywhere. But, I mean, the ramifications here in Winnipeg for us as fans of sport, which would give us a difficult perspective or one that's sort of caught within that sports circle. So, of course, we're going to see positive from it, has been overwhelmingly beneficial, one would think, to the city here. But I do understand the opponents and those that don't want to utilize tax dollars. Where I come at it from a fan of sport, though, is that I just hate hearing an organization or the threat of give us a stadium or give us an arena or we're gone. Like, as a sports fan, you hate hearing that, right? You hate it, almost like you're being held hostage. So real interesting to see what's going to happen here with Calgary. It's, and you're talking about the Saddle Dome that opened up in 1983. People talk about it being old quite a bit at this point in time, and you got to feel a little bit bad for the fans of the Flames right now. Like I said, being held in a place of hostage almost with this whole debate and argument.
Yeah, well, first off, if Brian Burke cannot be a pompous ass towards the people who pay to go watch the games, you know, it might make things a little bit more palatable for everyone. Like I can't stand. You're a position in power, and you're talking down to really the people that make all of this possible for you, right? And in all reality, you know, the people that don't want to pay for the arenas or the stadiums or whatever it is, they're in the right. Like, it's really one of the biggest scams, really, going out in public right now, is the fact that taxpayers, cities, towns, whatever it is, have to personally fund these billionaires' toys. Like, the fact that these guys very rarely have to pay any sort of money whatsoever, it's really the ultimate sadness. And the worst part is, like, I can totally understand as a sports fan where, you, like, what a position to be in, right? Like, do you want to pony up and pay to keep the team there? Or, you know, not drill out how many hundreds and thousands of dollars in tax money, but watch your team go to Arizona, or watch your team go to Seattle, or watch your team go to Carolina. Like, it's the real conundrum, and that's why these billionaires know that they kind of have the cities at their mercy, because eventually, with so many sports fans in every city, they kind of cave, right? Because the ultimate pain and the ultimate despair is watching your team leave. Like you almost have no win in this way if you're a citizen, and especially if you're a sports fan of whatever city that these owners are trying to extort money out of you are.
I tell you what, if you're involved with the Calgary Sport and Entertainment Corporation that owns the team, you surely do not want Brian Burke as being your mouthpiece or figurehead in leading the charge trying to get this deal done, right? So Ken King, who's the president, issued a statement saying, hey, look, we love Brian Burke, we love all this enthusiasm, but this is something that we're working on is in a partnership type of a manner, and please just let us be and let us go ahead and try and get this done. Burke didn't help anybody yesterday.
Well, and I agree with that, but is he right? Like, is he, and I agree, like, I'm the first one to say, if a hospital is going to close, but public money is going to go to get a, help a pro, professional sports team where the owner is literally profiting, I don't agree with that. But there is value to it, to the community. And I'm not just talking about the love of sports. I'm talking about, you know, I wasn't here when Shaw Park was built. But when I started covering the Goldeyes, all I heard about was how many people were adamant that this isn't good. And I think there is a fever out there that, you could not set foot in one of these buildings your entire life, but if you're a citizen of that city, you're going to benefit from it. They generate revenue. They help the city. There's taxes off of it. And like I said, if we're talking about fixing roads, I mean, we could open up the debate here. Would you rather have a new arena and an NHL team? Or would you rather have rapid transit? I'd be really torn on that. I'd be really, and we're paid to cover this team. I would be sitting here. This city desperately needs it. So I get the public money, and I'm a taxpayer myself. But Brian Burke's right here. Like, Calgary needs this team, and the city is going to benefit from it, and this new arena. So I don't know what the answer is. My question is Brian Burke's a little right here. I don't like the way he said it. I don't like, you know, but what he's saying specifically, what is, like, look at Edmonton. Look at the city of Winnipeg. And I was here 2 months after their MTS Bell Place opened, but I was here during the Investors Group field process. And I know that has had its struggles and everything else, but is it not benefiting the city greatly and even the citizens that will never step foot in these facilities?
One of the interesting arguments here that was used for Winnipeg and Edmonton was that the arena would help in a huge way to revitalize downtown. That argument cannot be brought to the table in Calgary. Right, so that like there are, it is wildly complex to try and measure, weigh, forecast all the pros and the cons that go into the situation here with such arenas or stadiums, right? And the ultimate bottom line impact on the community, its citizens and city, everything that comes into play here. They are wildly complex, but a different situation maybe does exist in Calgary because it's not like here in Winnipeg where the revitalization of downtown was really dearly needed. Same thing in Edmonton. Such is not the case in Calgary. So that one kind of an argument, which was so vital, I think, to Winnipeg and Edmonton, doesn't really exist there. It is super complex, though.
Yeah, and John Oliver had a great piece on this a year ago about just really the terribleness of what these massive billionaire owners do to cities when they ask for public funds. And they're raking in the dough, and nobody seems to really care about it because everybody loves the sports teams, and nobody wants to see them go, and I totally get that. But there's a lot of citizens in every city that aren't sports fans. And they have to bear the brunt of this sort of thing, too. And to me, the really sad thing is there's almost no way that the people of a city can really stick it to an owner, right? Where they say, we're not paying, because that owner ultimately can go to another city where they'll more than pony up enough money, as we saw with the Raiders, where they can go to Vegas, and Vegas basically, you know, not bankrupts the city, but just bends over backwards to fulfill whatever that ownership group needs. And now people in Vegas are all pissed off at what's going on there. So, like, the sad part about this whole situation is outside of the big wigs and the CEOs and the owners, you're almost a loser every other way, because even if the team does stay, you know, the average person has to end up paying so much money, when in all reality, it's the guys that are making the money that can afford to spend the dollars.
That wasn't all that was in the discussion yesterday. There was also a fairly comical piece. I think a lot of people, like, if him talking about the arena was a little bit of a hot button, how about him asking or also suggesting that the players for the Canadian NHL team should receive tax breaks because it's hard as a part of attracting players to Canadian teams. Can you imagine if they ever allowed that? Like, imagine the public outrage if guys that have tens of millions of dollars in contracts are getting tax breaks just so that the teams can do a better job of maybe attracting free agents and such.
See, and that's my thing with Brian Burke, because he's right that hinders the Canadian teams. So, like, what he says is, like, true. Like, the new facility in Calgary will benefit not just the hockey team, but the community, the taxes, the city itself. We all see the concerts. We all see the conventions, everything else. So what he says is right. But it's just stuff that you shouldn't really say, and that's a prime example. Like, what Canadian team has a hard doesn't have a hard time attracting players given the tax ramifications? That's a true statement. However, you're asking people to feel bad for guys making millions of dollars.
Yeah, and to bear to the brunt of that, right? Like, that's going to cost, that will end up costing, you know, pick your couple in middle class Canada in an NHL city. They're going to have to end up paying more taxes because the athletes are getting tax breaks.
Would love to get your thoughts on the comments of Brian Burke and saying that Manitoba's figured it out, Edmonton's figured it out, and Calgary. We're smarter here. Apparently not, is what he's referencing. On the Boss Pizza Fan Line at 9 o'clock, we'll take a break and talk about the Jays who avoided a sweep yesterday in California. On The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Alter Ego Sports want to help you make the summer off the chain. Visit TSN1290.ca and enter to win a 2017 Cannondale Quick 8 bike valued at over $500. We'll be giving away a new bike daily during Bike Week, June 19th to 23rd. For more details and enter now, visit TSN1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon, 54 minutes from the top of the hour. We'll hear some interesting stuff from the hockey panel on TSN and Insider Training. And Jesse Marshall is going to join us to tee up Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Final tonight. Yesterday, gentlemen, it took extra innings, but a two-run shot by Josh Donaldson in the 10th inning and a solo shot, the second of the game for Justin Smoke, his 17th of the season, helped propel the Blue Jays to a 10th inning win over the Oakland A's to avoid a three-game sweep. They go to Seattle today and will be taking on the Mariners Friday. You know, when they were up in this game and then it went to extras, I was like, you cannot get swept by the Oakland A's.
Yeah, that's for darn sure, right? And we were talking about this last week where you have these two upcoming series against the A's and then I think the Mariners now, right? And you're six games back after the win, you're six games back and 3.5 of a wild card spot. So you're just kind of hovering around and you need to make some noise here. At least they're in range, right? I suppose if you're a fan of the Blue Jays, things look like they could have been over maybe pretty much as June was coming around, but at least they're in range to reel in a wild card spot still and just kind of hold on and see what transpires. But a huge, huge win, obviously, last night.
Mariners on the weekend, another series I think that they don't have to sweep series, but they got to win these ones, especially against teams like this that are struggling.
Which is, I always find interesting because they themselves are a struggling team. But I guess the ultimate fact of the matter is that if you want to make some noise and make up some room, you got to try and topple a team. The Mariners themselves, though, are in a battle trying to go capture a wild card spot. So both these teams salivate at the thought of playing each other, right? The Mariners are rubbing their hands together going and saying, hey, we got the Blue Jays upcoming. And the Blue Jays are thinking, hey, we got to take care of the Mariners. It's kind of funny that way.
Which is probably what the A's were thinking as
Absolutely,
well.
Absolutely, yeah.
So they'll start a series against the Seattle Mariners on Friday. They have an off day today. They are 29-31, six games back of the Yankees in the AL East and 3.5 back of the wild card. The Houston Astros went into Kansas City, who are awful this year, 26-32, four and a half games back of Minnesota, and dropped two straight against them. So this does happen, obviously, in baseball. But the health of the Blue Jays is really interesting. And today, gentlemen, our man, John Gibbons, turned 55 today. And not only is that happy birthday, Gibby, however, well, Mr. Gibbons, I don't know you. But not only is that interesting, but he looks 75.
He does, today. Yeah. I was going to say that, too.
There's a lot of miles on John Gibbons.
There are, yeah.
The saunter out to the mound all the time and the whole Clint Eastwood, get off my lawn, kind of. What are you calling that for?
It is a real saunter, too, right? Like each step needs to be almost cautious as he's navigating his way out there.
I often think that if he was mic'd, you'd hear him coming out of the dugout going, oh, boys, the knees today. Yeah. I'll get out there, though. Give me a minute.
Knock on wood, yeah.
John Gibbons, 55 today, and the Jays head to Seattle to take on Michael Remus's Mariners in a series on the weekend. We'll take a break when we come back. Lots of NHL talk on the Royal Sports Power Hour, starting with some interesting stuff on insider trading on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is excited for the 2017 Winnipeg Jets Draft Party presented by SportCheck Friday, June 23rd at the Club Region Event Center. Hosts for the evening are defenseman Josh Morrissey and forwards Kyle Connor and Jack Rossovic. All fans in attendance will receive an exclusive 2017 Draft Party giveaway, dinner and beverage, and the chance to win prizes valued at over $5,000. Tickets are on sale now. Visit winnipegjets.com or ticketmaster.ca for more information. Visit TSN at 1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon on the Big Show. 6 minutes past the hour in the Royal Sports Power Hour. Craig Button's final pre-draft list. Craigslist is out. And Nolan Patrick is no longer number one. We'll talk about that. Jesse Marshall is going to join us and tee up Game 5 between the Peds and Prens and NHL news and notes as well. But yesterday, gentlemen, James Duffy and the TSN panel in Pittsburgh, right along the river, had a outdoor insider trading with Darren Drigger and Pierre Lebrun, and talked about some interesting things not only around this series but around the NHL, as it is going to be an interesting month. Here's TSN's insider trading.
A Riverside edition of insider trading here in Pittsburgh with Darren Drigger and Pierre Lebrun. On last week's edition, Bob was talking about some unrest with some agents and players about the NHL Players Association and the possibility of Chris Chelios getting back involved. Some new developments there.
Well, Chris Chelios, I'm told, his role, his contract with the Detroit Red Wings has been terminated. Now, that sounds rather ominous, but the reality is it was a one-year deal with the Red Wings that was expiring at the end of the month. And I'm told that Chelios went to the Detroit Red Wings to say that he was involved with Anton Thun, Kurt Overhart, and Rich Winter as they try to strengthen the National Hockey League Players Association, and there could perhaps be a role within the PA as an ombudsman. Well, you can't work for the Detroit Red Wings and get involved in this process, so to make it clean, the Detroit Red Wings essentially cut him loose. But again, there's no bad blood there. He could circle back if things don't work with the PA and return to the Detroit Red Wings as early as next year.
All right. A lot of action expected before and after the NHL expansion draft, and all eyes on Anaheim and a lot of salivating towards their depth on D. How do they approach this?
Well, I know a lot of people are looking at the Ducks ahead of the expansion draft and feeling like maybe there's a gun to their head. I'm not sure that's how they view it, because frankly, they're in a great position when you consider how many teams in the NHL are in dire need of an upgrade on D, and they happen to have one that they possibly can move. I think it's going to be Sammy Vatanen. I'm told teams are absolutely lining up in their interest for him among the teams that I think have interest. Toronto, Tampa Bay, New Jersey, but honestly, there are more teams than that. So if the Ducks move ahead on a trade for Sammy Vatanen, it allows them, I think, to protect all the guys they really want to, including Josh Manson. A lot of people wondering how they can protect him. Maybe he'll be left unprotected. No way. He'll be an Anaheim Duck through that process.
Well, and as we talked about last Friday, developing interest in Edmonton's Jordan Eberle, that should come as a surprise to no one. I know that the New York Islanders are in that group of teams that are interested, and because of the fact that they're going to have to, or it seems likely they're going to move a defenseman, maybe you can connect Travis Hamonic to the Edmonton Oilers. But know this, you know, Jordan Eberle is second only to Connor McDavid in terms of puck touches on the Edmonton Oilers. So the Oilers value him, and they're not going to give him away. Is there a strong chance he gets traded? Yes, there's a strong chance, but there's no guarantee.
Trade wins in Arizona as well. The Coyotes listening on veteran goalie Mike Smith. He's 34 years old. He's got a couple more years on his deal. I think they'd probably like to get younger at that position. If the offer is right, they're not going out of their way to try and deal this guy, but there is interest. I'm told there's at least three teams that have solicited phone calls to Arizona. Among the teams, Calgary, of course. We know they need an upgrade in goal. I still think at the end of the day, the Flames' number one target is Marc-Andre Fleury, if at all possible. We'll find out after the Cup final, but certainly Mike Smith is a guy that I believe is at least on the back burner for Calgary as well.
We know San Jose loves Martin Jones. Are they close to an extension then?
I think all signs point towards an extension announced in early July. Very positive contract talks. He's a year out from free agency, but they're taking care of him this summer in a hurry.
All right. This was a strange story. The Leafs talk, Kyle Dubas' talks with Colorado that the Leafs nixed. And we don't still know the full details of what happened there. But is it fair to say he's definitely staying in Toronto? And will his role change?
Well, his role is expected to get bigger, to expand. Now, whether or not that means that ultimately one day he becomes their general manager when Lou Lamoriello is out of the way, that's a little bit premature. I believe that he's been given a contract extension, but you're right. What a bizarre back and forth between Colorado and Toronto. Toronto did give the Avalanche permission to speak with Kyle Dubas, but only because the Maple Leafs believe that, you know, they were going to swap philosophical ideas or work on the world of analytics. They did not see Colorado looking at Kyle Dubas as a potential hire. So that's why ultimately the whole thing was nixed. But Colorado most definitely wanted to hire Kyle Dubas.
So it sounds like he's a part, maybe a big part, in the Lou Lamoriello retirement succession plan, if Lou ever retires, because it doesn't look like he has any plans to do that anytime soon.
The TSN hockey panel, James Duffy, Darren Drigger, and Pierre LeBrun. A couple of interesting things there, gentlemen. And first of all, Chris Chelios going to help strengthen the union. Do you remember the first lockout? When Chris Chelios was on a conference call for the 2013 Hockey Hall of Fame, he was asked about his comments about Commissioner Gary Bettman, and he said, let's not mention that name on this call. This is a good day. Then you go back to the original lockout in 94-95 when he was a part of the Blackhawks. If I was Gary Bettman, I'd be worried about my family or my well-being. Now he's going to affect a lot of people, and some crazed fan or even a player, who knows, they might take it into their own hands and figure they get him out of the way and things might get settled. You'd hate to see something like that happened, but he took the job. He later apologized for that publicly, called the NHL offices and apologized, and issued a statement. My comments were inexcusable, and I can't express how sorry I am. I'm glad that Commissioner Bettman has chosen to be lenient in my case and let me start the season with the Blackhawks on Friday night, i.e. not suspend me or fine me. Bettman made a reference after the lockout in 94-95 that it's a heated process, blah, blah, blah. But he's now working with Kurt Overhart, Rich Winter, to strengthen the union.
That's great news, right, for people that are hoping another lockout's not impending? I guess. I say sarcastically, right?
Yeah, just...
A little scary. But hey, man, they got it. You want your union to be as strong as possible. If you got a guy there that is of that mindset, right, I suppose that's what you want in place.
Yeah, but do you really think he's going to go in there and bully Gary Bettman and the owners into caving into the demands of the players? Like, isn't it the worst thing that... Everybody around hockey knows what's coming, and there's almost no way you can stop it
so
at this point.
So that means you think there'll be ultimately another lockout here?
I don't know how long it'll be, but some kind of a work stoppage for sure.
I'm not of that mind. I just like to think that the two sides can come to be reasonable and see the damage that has been done in the past by it and be more intelligent in their approach to understanding one another. I sure hope that's... I'm going to be a little bit cup half full optimistic here, Wicks, and not think that's going to happen.
I was going to say blissfully ignorant or naive. Just because, like, the track record, right?
But don't you learn from those mistakes?
You would think so. And every other major sports league has learned from those mistakes.
And ultimately, it'll still be fear dealing with Bettman, right?
I thought they learned that the last time. And then when that thing started, and I was, you know, talking with Andrew Ladd, I thought this thing was going to go all year. I was surprised I got 48 games in. So I don't know, but Chris Chelios coming in and sitting in a room with Gary Bettman potentially, I don't think it's going to help the relationship whatsoever. You know, and as far back, we can talk about that was 94-95, but in 2013 when he got the Hall, and they, you know, you ask a guy about his entire career, and he's known for that quote. And you bring up the name, he goes, don't bring that name up. This is a good day. Like, I don't think in the past 6 years they've patched any, or 4 years they've patched anything up. It's interesting to me, however. Sammy Vatanen, available. 26 years old, right side. 30 points last year in 71 games. 24 points in 71 games. 38 points in 71 games the year prior. Any interest there from a Jets standpoint? Right-sided D, but...
No, and that's the end of the conversation. Right side D, bam, no. That they have a very specific need here, and they need to go and fill this specific need and quit screwing around and go get a top four left side D, period, end of story.
Where do you think he ends up then? I mean, anyone?
Your guess is as good as... It's so tough to say. I think...
He'll be coveted, for sure.
Yeah, it would take one hell of a right shot defenseman for the Jets to kind of forego having some kind of balance in their decor to try and bring a guy in. And I don't think Sammy Vatanen fits that bill in Winnipeg.
This is the Big Show, TSN 1290. Also an insider trading, Mike Smith, 35 years old, not actively shopping him. Interesting they mentioned Calgary there. I know Calgary has two really high-end prospects in goal that they don't feel are ready yet. But they need to fill that void. Brian Elliott, it sounds to me like from what I've heard, and including guys like Darren Dreger, given the playoff run he had, the Flames aren't interested. So Mike Smith is just an interesting name to me at that age. And then Marc-Andre Fleury, as LeBrun said there, Pittsburgh to Calgary, what that could end up looking like. Because Calgary will do the deal. They've done it before.
I suppose if you're Calgary and you think that you're on that edge and the secret ingredient would be someone to go in the pipes for a couple of years as your youngsters get find themselves, I suppose those three names, if they're not interested in Elliott, but when you got like a guy cut from the cloth of a Fleury or maybe a Ryan Miller, a Mike Smith, like, they're obviously going after some veteran presence, something very established and someone that can contribute right away to minimize whatever risk involved over the next couple of years. I suppose it would make sense for a guy like Mike Smith.
Yeah, and the more goalies that come open on the trade market here, the more it makes the free agent situation super interesting for the Jets, because if you pin Fleury to the Flames, well, there's a starting job gone. Mike Smith goes to another team. I mean, you're not paying him just under $6 million to be a platoon guy at that point. Like, you know, for guys like Steve Mason and Jonathan Bernier, Brian Elliott even, like, if the Jets, if they can
you
be
could
patient
get a pretty
here,
good deal.
Play your cards right, deal, and they yeah. might be able to get a guy for a lot less than everyone anticipated going into free agency here, because that's a lot of goalies on the trade market here, and the jobs that were there to start going into the offseason are dwindling, and there's very, very few of them, and a goalie might look at the situation here in Winnipeg where might not be the de facto starter right out of the gate, but a young team with playoff potential and the fact that I could go in there and grab the starting job and be a guy to play some playoff games might not be too many situations, you know, if the Flames grab a guy on the trade market, might not be too many that are better than here in Winnipeg.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And it would be real interesting to me if Marc-Andre Fleury said, I'm not waving to go to Calgary unless they get a new arena. Ryan Burke would be like, finally, the Kyle Dubas thing was bizarre to me. And I thought, well, here we go. Like, he's going to move on and become a GM. Why would you want to talk to him? What was Toronto thinking if they didn't want to, as they said in Insider Trading, they wanted to talk to him and get some philosophies. We thought they wanted to hire him. We're not letting him go. Why would you let him? What do you think they want to talk to him about? Philosophies and analytics and all this stuff, and then just go back to work for another team and thanks for your help?
Yeah, it's a little bit
like
tricky.
I don't get that.
I do understand, though, how typically organizations in sports, if they don't hold guys or in management or coaching back if you have a chance to make climb the ladder, right? So that they give an opportunity to go out. But to me, and it was interesting, you go to Colorado, Kyle Dubas will be able to handpick what organization he wants to be with. If he can't already, it'll be something that he'll be able to do within a year or two kind of a thing. Like, as a 31-year-old guy, already a profound impact in Toronto, all kinds of crazy buzz about him. As Toronto continues to flourish, the value of Kyle Dubas will just go through the roof that much more.
Yeah, I'm not sure why a team would allow someone from their own organization to give free advice and improve another. Like, it's so bizarre. Like, I find that really, really hard to believe. It sounds like maybe Shanahan or somebody, whoever's a big fan of Dubas, I would guess Shanahan, because he hired him, probably made him a counteroffer that was too good to refuse in a situation that can really help Kyle Dubas and kind of maybe give him another year. And whether he wants to stay in Toronto, like, we don't really know with the whole Hunter Dubas thing, who's going to be the successor there. But what a bizarre things played out there. And I don't really buy any of it.
Like, it's not like they let him talk to him and then go, wait a minute, Lou Lamoriello's 74 years old. Like the whole thing to me is, why would you let him talk to another team about anything unless you thought that he was going to go get a job? Like, I don't understand the whole it's bizarre.
Yeah, so don't accept it then. Like, to me, when you hear something that's kind of that goofy, you're going to go and give them some trade secrets and all the rest of it. No, that's really hard to believe. So just
here's
assume
how you
that
fix your team analytically,
related.
And we'll see you next season. Like, it's bizarre. Anyways, we'll take a break. Craigslist is out. That's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Past the hour, Jim Tolt, Troy Wessler, Brandon Rewicki with you on The Big Show, TSN 1290, and Craigslist, the last edition prior to this year's draft that's coming up on June 23rd, and the National Hockey League is out, and for the first time all year, and it's been very, very close, and the times we've had Craig Button not only on this show but on TSN 1290, he said it could go either way, but he always gave the edge, despite the injuries, despite the lack of games played, by Winnipegger Nolan Patrick, the number one ranking heading into the draft. But he has changed that up in the final top 30. Nico Hischier has taken over as the number one ranked prospect for this year's National Hockey League draft. Nolan Patrick goes to number two.
It's real interesting. And I have, you know, haven't seen... Certainly don't know enough about either of these two players to give in-depth analysis or understanding what they bring to the table outside of what I read about them. And from what I can tell, the strongest point that scouts seem to absolutely love about Hischier is his defensive game. And some scouts saying they've never seen an 18-year-old player with a defensive game as strong as what Hischier brings to the table. So it's... some concern that he's at 176 or 177, but everyone knows that he'll gain weight here going forward. And an interesting situation. I'm also intrigued with a draft guide that we get. We talk to Gus Katsaros all the time and have a draft guide here from it's pretty interesting, that shows that they think that the Heiskanen is going to be the first pick for what Jersey's going to take because of their needs. And then that'll drop Hischier. They figure the Flyers will take. And then Dallas, who doesn't really have a need and needs remarkable defensive help, may well be in a position to trade that first pick for Patrick to pick up an impactful defensive player. So there could be a lot of interesting little twists and turns come draft day.
True bit of Dallas for the Winnipeg boy. I would be shocked. I mean, that would be wild. That kind of took me by surprise. I don't know about that. I'll let that marinate a little bit.
They wouldn't trade Truba to a division rival, would they?
I mean, if you get the Winnipeg boy, though, whatever. I mean, it's we'll move on from that. But how about Cody Glass too? Kind of moving up the draft boards a little bit. Winnipeg boy trains at NRG Athletes here in the city too. And how cool would that be to see him sneak into the top five maybe a little bit too? Because he's a guy that's getting a lot of love from all the scouts out there.
Moved up to see him
would be nice.
Moved up to the fourth ranking. Sorry to cut you off there. Moved up to fourth, and I would credit that to being on the Big Show a couple of weeks ago. That bumped him up a few, I'm sure. Cale Makar, a defenseman from the Alberta Junior Hockey League, which is the equivalent of the Manitoba Junior Hockey League, has moved up to third. He's 5'11", 180 pounds, right-shot defenseman. He had 75 points in 54 games played in the AJHL. And for those of you wondering around the Jets pick at 13th, there's now two defensemen. 13th-ranked Pierre-Olivier Joseph from Charlottetown of the Quebec Major Junior League. He is a left-handed D-man. He's 6'2". And 161 pounds. He had 39 points in 62 games. And the 14th ranked player in the final Craigslist before the NHL draft is Cal Foote, the son of Adam Foote, a defenseman with the Kelowna Rockets. He's a right-handed defenseman, though. But interesting, that name at 13th from the Quebec Major Junior League has crept up to the 13th spot.
So not too far away now, huh? And just adds to the interest, everything going on here. This is going to be a fantastic offseason for the NHL.
I thought Adam Foote was literally like just out of the league.
Pretty much.
And now,
is.
Like, isn't that just ridiculous? Like, you have Nylanders pumping out kids, and now Adam Foote's kids. I find it funny because I thought Adam Foote retired like 5 years ago.
So what's your feeling on this draft? Like, hypothetically, if a guy like Cody Glass or somebody like that falls to 13th. Do the Jets go that way, or are the Jets just at 13th looking for a left-handed D-man? What do you feel?
Well, I don't understand. Like, you go get a left-handed D-man, you're talking about a number of years away. So I don't know that they're going to identify a left-handed D and make a pick in that situation. And why would Cody Glass drop that much?
Well, I'm just say take Glass not dropping off that much. Do you take the best player available, or are you just specifically going to take what you need at 13th for the Jets?
Well, that's I don't know what their that's a long time, forever type debate in sport, right? Do you simply draft players that fill holes in what you need, or do you take the best player available? That's always a huge sort of debate to be had, but I don't think, like, at this point in time, you go take a left-handed shot defenseman because your immediate need is that. That doesn't make sense whatsoever to me.
No, but they need left-handed D-men generally. Like, for the next 3 to 5 years, they're going to need some left-handed D-men. They don't have enough
now. Right-handed.
But if the left-handed D is 25th on your board and there's a forward that's number 5 on your board, I mean, that would be just lunacy, right? Yeah. Like, you look at it more as an asset than as necessarily a position. You're drafting an asset, and you want to take the highest, best asset possible. And to me, you have to kind of skirt past position. If you want to address it later in the draft, go ahead. But first round, you really just need to focus on who you think is the best player available.
Fair enough. We'll talk Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Final next with Jesse Marshall on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of sports. Every week, TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. Nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who is dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday on The Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them soon. Our next segment is brought to you by Johnson Waste Management, and we will delve into Game 5 tonight of the Stanley Cup Finals in Pittsburgh between the Penguins and the Nashville Predators. Jim Tolt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you. Good morning, everyone. It's 35 minutes past the hour. It's going to be another gorgeous day today here in Winnipeg. To talk about Game 5, we welcome back into the program from thepensblog.com and at pensblog on Twitter, Mr. Jesse Marshall. How are you, sir?
Hey, guys. How are you doing this morning?
We're doing well, thank you. And before we delve too deep into Game 5, I'll just get your thoughts on Game 4. And I thought, you know, the whole Listerine comment from P.K. Subban was a bit ridiculous but fun. But I don't know how much it weighed into Sidney Crosby's game, but I thought he played probably one of the best players on the ice in Game 4.
Yeah, probably. I think that was the game that he managed to find himself the most space. I mean, 2 breakaway opportunities in that one. I don't know that the shenanigans played any role in that, but I think the Penguins really, I think they played their best game of the series. And I know it sounds crazy to say that because they lost, but the 2 games that they won in Pittsburgh weren't really complete performances. And I think that, you take a look back at Game 4, and I think they pretty evenly throughout the course of the game generated a good number of scoring chances and kept the shot total a little bit more even than they had through the first 3. So, overall, I think they did a much better job of getting their forwards the puck with room to skate. I think in the first 3 games, they were kind of relegated to starting their breakout from puck battles on the wall. And when you do that, you know, your forwards are gaining possession of the puck with, you know, flat-footed, essentially, with no speed. And they found ways to get the puck to the stick of Sidney Crosby, coming through the neutral zone with speed, and when you get those situations, you can back the defense up and put them on their heels a little bit. So I think if they do what they did in Game 4 tonight in Game 5, I think they're going to be in pretty good shape. It's just become a question of being able to solve Pecorine now.
Jesse, what are your thoughts on the patience exhibited by Pittsburgh in exiting their zone in that game in comparison to the first 3?
Yeah, I think that through the first 3, they made a lot of panic plays. Mike Sullivan calls them hope plays, where you get a chance to make a play on the puck. You're under duress as a defenseman. got a couple guys breathing down your neck, and you just slap one off the glass and hope one of your forwards can grab it and go off to the races. And that really resulted in way too many turnovers. And I think what Pittsburgh did best in Game 4 was when they saw something that they didn't like, and they were, you know, on the breakout or you know, trying to generate offense, they didn't just run headfirst into it. I think they did way too much of that in the first three games. They did a lot of resetting in Game 4. I think they dulled the pace down a little bit, slowed things down, and if the breakout pass wasn't there, they went D to D, the forwards looped back through the defensive zone, and they just started all over again. And I think that's what they have to do. Nashville's forecheck's been tenacious the whole series. They've been trying to force the Penguins into making decisions, you know, from a defenseman perspective that they're not comfortable with. And I think in that game, they were much, much better at just taking a deep breath, taking what was given to them, and if it wasn't there, give the guys another loop through the neutral zone and try it all over again a second time.
Phil Kessel isn't scoring, and he spoke for the first time since prior to the series starting yesterday to the media and said that's hockey, you know, and he's still getting chances. What are your impressions of him during this final?
Throughout the playoffs, really, it's been a mixed bag for Phil at even strength. I think he's been great on the power play. But at even strength, he's gone through some lulls, which we're not used to seeing from him, considering the role he played on the Hagelin-Bonino line on the vaunted HBK line last season. I think that it's Pittsburgh, I think, particularly has accepted Phil for, I think, the guy that he is. He's a goal scorer, and when he's not doing that, he gets put under the magnifying glass because I don't think there's a whole lot else that he's doing that is a major help, whether it be in the defensive zone or you know, back checking or knocking guys off the puck. So to the tune of what we spoke about earlier, Game 4 was probably his best performance. I think he had 7 shot attempts at the net, his highest total for any of the first three games. Actually, I think Game 4 he eclipsed his shot attempts total from the other three games combined at even strength. So it's trending in the right direction, I think. Separating him from Evgeny Malkin was kind of a decision that I think needed to be made by Mike Sullivan, because you want Evgeny Malkin and Phil Kessel both to take the initiative to shoot the puck. And I think that the two of them together, I don't want to say they were deferring to each other, but there was a little bit of too much of a fancy element, I think, to what they were trying to do in the offensive zone, where they needed to play ugly hockey, and they weren't playing ugly hockey. I think they were trying to go east-west a little bit too much. So that's something to watch for me tonight. I think if Phil Kessel sticks with Matt Cullen on that sort of de facto third line, I think it's going to force him to try to create the offense himself. And with Phil and with the shot he has, he can score from anywhere. And that's the bonus. There's no such thing as a bad shot when it comes to Phil. So, you know, we always say, guys, you can't win the lottery if you don't buy a ticket. And Phil Kessel's just got to keep buying tickets, because through the first three games, four games really, he just did not do that enough. So I look for that to continue tonight, and I think Phil's going to be firing him at the net through the course of 60 minutes tonight.
Unless my eyes are deceiving me, Ron Hainsey played the most minutes of all defensemen in Game 4. Jesse, are you surprised by that? And what are your thoughts with regards to the state of the game for Ron Hainsey?
I am surprised by that, and that's probably the biggest hot-button topic, I think, in Pittsburgh right now. Ron Hainsey, I think, was a guy that the Penguins did need, given the loss to Chris Letang. And you have to remember, when he was acquired, it wasn't just Chris Letang. It was Chris Letang. It was Trevor Daley. It was Justin Schultz for a period of time. I mean, they were down to their bare bones. But I think where Ron Hainsey's been exposed in this series is when he's playing on his offside, which is a tough ask of anybody. And it's crazy to see that, because the Penguins are generally really averse to doing that to guys. Mike Sullivan is very conscious of handedness when it comes to his defensive pairings. So he's on his offside, and I think that the speed of the Nashville forwards has really given him a hard time. They're targeting him, make no mistake about it. When Nashville dumps the puck into the zone, the puck's going to Hainsey's side of the ice. He's been forced to turn around a lot. They've put him in uncomfortable situations, and Hainsey's not really a guy that's going to, you know, make that amazing breakout pass to spring forwards up ice and generate offense. Nashville is forcing him to do that. If you look back at games 3 and 4 on the road, Ron Hainsey led the team with defensive zone turnovers. I think that's been the story of the last two games for him. A lot of people in Pittsburgh have been calling for Mark Streit. I don't think that's a change that Mike Sullivan will make this late into the game. I think we're at that level with Hainsey now, is that you could use the term liability, I think, to describe his work in the defensive zone. And he's been great on the penalty kill, so you can't take that away from him. But at even strength right now, the tempo, I think, has been a little bit too much for him to handle at certain points.
Jesse Marshall of thepensblog.com joining us this morning on The Big Show, TSN 1290, 43 minutes past the hour. This might seem like a dumb question, but why not Mark Streit? What have you seen from him in Pittsburgh that isn't working out for him?
I've not seen anything. This goes back to a discussion about handedness. The one comment Mike Sullivan did make about it, and this was weeks ago, this goes back to the end of the Columbus series. I mean, Mike Sullivan did make a comment that, you know, there were some guys in the lineup, and you can include Trevor Daley in this discussion, that just don't seem to perform well on their offside. And he didn't want to sacrifice, I think, the shuffling of the pairings that you'd have to do when you put Mark Streit in, because Mark Streit can only play on one side of the ice. So I personally haven't seen anything from Streit that would make me feel hesitant to put him in the lineup. But I think Mike Sullivan has, whether it be at practice or something in-game that he's identified. You have to remember that with Streit, you've got Chad Ruweedle, who came up from Wilkes-Barre Scranton in the American Hockey League, who's a 28-year-old, I will use the term journeyman AHL defenseman, who's ahead of Mark Streit on the depth chart. So I think if a change was made, I think they'd go to Chad Ruweedle, who's now healthy, and played throughout the course of this run, a little bit against Columbus, Washington, and some against Ottawa as well. He's played a little bit in every series, and he's a good puck-moving defenseman. He's adequate at what he does. He doesn't stick out like a sore thumb. And I think if a change was to be made, ultimately I think they'd go to Ruweedle ahead of Streit, and that's what makes this Mark Streit situation even more intriguing, is he's got a 28-year-old journeyman ahead of him on the depth chart. So it makes you scratch your head. And really, again, the only comment we've gotten from it out of the Penguins coaching staff is in regards to handedness. So and I think if something did happen, if someone was hurt or a change was to be made, I think you'd see Ruweedle go in before Mark Streit.
Jesse, I suppose similarly to how Pekarene was sort of feet were in the fire by some people wondering if he should start Game 3, a similar situation developing by a group here thinking that and wondering if maybe Marc-Andre Fleury should go back in. Do you think that debate is warranted?
I think, you know, it's only warranted for me if you think Marc-Andre Fleury is going to go in net and score three goals a game, because that's the problem right now. I don't think Matt Murray is playing poorly. I think he's been just average for what we've come to expect from him. You know, I think you look back to the goal review call from Game 4, the one that just barely snuck across the line, and, you know, a lot of people criticized his movement from post to post on that. I think a lot of people were critical of his glove and his positioning on the Arvidsson breakaway goal. That's all fair, but at the end of the day, if Jake Guentzel scores two goals on some of the chances he had, we're having a much different conversation about the state of the series today. And for me, goaltending, and Mike Sullivan said as much on one of the off days here. Mike Sullivan said, I don't believe we've lost a game this series because of goaltending. I think that's a fair assessment. I think the problem right now is that the Penguins went from being able to score goals on Pekarene without even really trying to having high-quality, high-danger chances that aren't going in the net, and I think that's what shifted in the series. So, again, I don't think Matt Murray's been above criticism, but at the end of the day, I don't think changing goalies is really going to affect, you know, would have affected the outcome from the prior two games.
What's your feeling on Game 5 tonight back in Pittsburgh with each team taking the games on home ice?
So, you know, this is big. Pekarene's performance in Pittsburgh was bad, and I don't think that we could just forget about that. I'm not saying he's going to regress back to being a goalie with a .750 save percentage, but I think if the Penguins can play the way that they did in Game 4 again, Nashville's going to have to rely on him to do the exact same thing. The Penguins found space. They were able to spring Crosby, Kunitz, Guentzel a couple of times, had a lot of high-quality chances. If they can continue that, I think they're going to be in good shape. I really do. I think that they have something to build off of, It almost feels like a little bit more of an uphill battle now that they've lost the last two, but I think Pittsburgh, as a city, has been chomping at the bit to get this series back here, having watched the crowd in Nashville and the atmosphere in Nashville over the course of the last two nights. I think it's kind of pumped some juice back into the life of the Penguins fans, and I expect that place to be as hostile as it's been in any point through this playoff run tonight. So I think that this all comes down to the performance of Pekka Rinne. He's been the focal point of this series from the start, you know, for bad reasons and good reasons. And if the Penguins can get to him, I think that they're going to prevent Nashville from kind of locking up the neutral zone. They're going to make them open it up a bit. And we think back to game two, when the Penguins forced the Predators to open it up, that's when the odd man breaks start coming. And we've seen the Penguins score goals in bunches in this series, in opportunities where they've had odd man breaks. So I think you're going to see a Penguins team tonight that is dialed in, and everybody, you know, it's all rhetoric, but they're all saying the right things, and they seem geared up and ready to go. So that place is going to be electric tonight. I'm excited about it.
Jesse, we appreciate your time. As always, great stuff, and enjoy Game 5.
Thanks, guys.
Great stuff, Jesse. Thanks so much.
ThePensBlog.com, once again, is where you can read Jesse's fine work. This was a presentation, this segment, of Johnson Waste Management, recognized at best in the business 10 years in a row. We'll take a break, and the Big Show will have your NHL news and notes when we come back on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Leave the back gate unlocked because TSN's coming over on selected evenings throughout this summer. TSN 1290 will back up the truck and bring a portable party for up to 25 people, including catering by Qdoba Mexican Eats, including a burrito bowl, a hot bar with tortillas so you can make tacos, and abundance of three cheese queso. Beverages including a sampling of Tall Grass Vodka, Winnipeg's only grain-to-bottle vodka produced by Capital K Distillery, a family pack of fireworks to light up your night, courtesy of Archangel Fireworks, and an iGrill 2 digital app connected thermometer for each grand prize winner provided by Lux Barbecue Company, and hey, a hot tub for you to soak in over the course of an entire week provided by our friends at Oasis Leisure Center. We'll also have TSN 1290 crew on site to help serve up and set up. Parties will happen Thursday evenings from now until August, including June 29th, July 20th, and August 10th. Enter online at tsn1290.ca, and we could be seeing you soon, including tonight. Congratulations to Joe Rael, our first winner, and that will take place this evening. Keep listening for our next announcement in just a few weeks, and of course, tsn1290.ca. NHL news and notes time. Jim, Troy, and Brandon on the Big Show. Tyler Toffoli of the LA Kings gets a three-year, $13.8 million extension. The 25-year-old played 63 games last season, had 16 goals, 18 assists, and a plus-six rating. He was a member of both Stanley Cup-winning teams for the Kings as well, 175 points in 293 games. You like the signing? Is that the good price?
Yeah, I think it's pretty good signing and price all the way around here, and a solid contributor. I like the move. There's no question about it.
Yeah, it's a great deal for the Kings. Toffoli kind of misses out a little bit here, but he checks off all the boxes, right? He's a first-line talent. His possession numbers were just outstanding, just at 57% this year, which is way, 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 way up there in the NHL. So it's a huge deal for them. You kind of would have liked to have seen, if you're a Kings fan, lock him in a bit longer here because he's going to be a free agent at 28 when he can really cash in on another big deal. But
maybe that's why you're getting the deal here.
Yeah,
right?
If you're the Kings, do you need him for 6-7 years, or would you rather just kind of maybe look at this as a three-year window where you lock in a really key component for a real good price?
You think he should have got more?
Well, I mean, like the per-year thing, I just think he would have liked more years, but at the same time, he's going to...
Toffoli would have liked more
years? The Kings.
Yeah.
So, which I mean...
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and United Firefighters of Winnipeg present Caring for Kids. Support the staff and services of the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba today. Text KIDS to 129090. Of course, standard message rates may apply. Every time you do, United Firefighters of Winnipeg will donate $1 to the Children's Hospital, up to $1,000. Your actions can help the Children's Hospital keep caring for kids across Manitoba. Kids like Michaelia, who is currently battling cancer. For more on Michaelia and Caring for Kids, visit tsn1290.ca. Caring for Kids is presented by United Firefighters of Winnipeg and TSN 1290. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you on the big show on this lovely Thursday morning. Going to get close to 30 degrees out. We're going to hear from Phil Kessel. We're going to talk some more about the Stanley Cup Finals later on this hour with Jonathan Davis. And, of course, we'll tee up the Boston Pizza fan line, which will be open for a full hour today at 9 a.m. Right now we're going to shift to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Training camp well underway. And the first preseason game is a Saturday in Regina. And, of course, TSN 1290, Darren Bombing and the crew will have our full Blue Bomber pregame show coverage. We welcome into the program from BlueBombers.com, Mr. Ed Tate. Ed, how are you?
Fantastic, fellas. How are you?
Doing very well, thank you. We've heard for years and years and years, or at least seasons under this Kyle Walters regime and Mike O'Shea, that they want more competitive camps and that competition there. How competitive is this camp in your mind?
Yeah, I suppose it's hard to compare one camp to the next, but it does seem really deep. It's not just that there's a few of the new pieces that are pushing the veterans. It seems to be a lot of guys. And for a team that was pretty well established at the end of last year, I think there's 16 to 24 starters back from last year's West semifinal. That's pretty impressive. So I don't think any of the veterans out there are getting too comfy yet, aside from maybe Andrew Harris or Matt Nichols or Weston Dressler. But that's a good thing, is that you want competition in every camp, and we're seeing that, especially at the spots where there was a bit of a question mark going into camp, like middle linebacker or a defensive tackle and maybe a receiver spot. So it's been good in that regard, but I would have a hard time saying that, you know, the quality of talent is significantly better than in the early 2000s or something like that, because it's just too hard to compare.
Ed, you had a real interesting piece yesterday on Andrew Harris. You got to love the way that man communicates. He's always very direct, straightforward, and doesn't mess around with his words at all.
No, you know, it's interesting, Troy. When this team started off 1-4 last year, you know, everybody was in a panic. And I can just always, Andrew Harris's voice is in the back of my head, because I can remember going to him all the time and hearing, just settle down, we're going to be okay, I can see it. And it wasn't just, you know, propaganda. There was something there, and it turned out to be true, and it wasn't just about the quarterback change. He saw something with this team, and we saw it grow during the course of last year. So when he speaks about this camp and how, you know, the veterans are leading and everybody seems to be a little bit ahead of where they were last year, I think that says something about just the transformation we've seen in a year. Because at this time last year, let's face it, Drew Willey was the starting quarterback. You know, Macho Harris was the safety. We didn't know who Travis Bond was. So there's been a lot of change, but there's also a lot less questions right now about this club than there was a year ago.
What's been the most interesting story to you, or maybe a couple of them, Ed? I know it's hard to pick just one at this year's camp.
I mean, in terms of new pieces, there's a lot of guys in the secondary that are pushing, but you start to wonder about, you know, where the spot is for them. Like, you did a piece today on Matt Smalley, who just came in on the weekend and has been really impressive. He's a guy that had a shot at a computer programming gig after he couldn't find work this offseason, and the Bombers think that it's his kind of computer programming background that has helped him really dive into the playbook in a hurry. I did a story the other day on Curtis Poop Johnson, who is on my all-nickname team, that's for sure, a defensive tackle who is starting to catch some eyes. But I guess the thing that the other storyline that's just jumping out is just how many of the veterans look like they're getting pushed but have kind of responded. They're counterpunching. You know, I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of changes to the receiving core. The secondary, a guy like Bruce Johnson, who might have been under the microscope, is getting pushed, but he's had a really good camp. So I'm looking forward to Saturday night just to start to get a little bit more of a clear picture on some of those things that are still uncertain, like the middle linebacker job, who will return kicks, those sort of things.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that middle linebacker job, Ed, and that's basically the quarterback for the defense. Your thoughts on what you've seen thus far in camp?
Well, everybody's talking about it, Troy. I mean, Sam Hurl's getting a lot of work with the number one defense. I still, you know, that doesn't mean that he's locked in there for July 1 in Saskatchewan when they open the regular season. And I think that's why this game on Saturday is important for Kyle Knox, George Snow, Nick Temple, Kyrie Wilson, all the people that we've been talking about through camp. But at the same time, and I keep mentioning this too, Sam Hurl's getting reps there because it's not just about getting your seven best Canadians on the field. It's about getting your best imports. And a guy like Curtis Johnson is pushing to maybe change the ratio along the defensive line. They've always talked about having Westerman and then a rotation of maybe Jake Thomas and Faith Akakadi is on the defensive tackle. But if Curtis Johnson is that dominant, you got to get him on the field. And maybe that the trade-off there is that you put Sam Hurl at middle linebacker. So that's where that one stands. Again, huge preseason game, not just for the new faces, but for a guy like Sam Hurl to kind of prove that he could handle the load if that's what the decision they go with at that spot.
Ed Tate from BlueBombers.com joining us this morning on The Big Show, 10 minutes past the hour, talking about Blue Bomber training camp and, of course, preseason action on Saturday in Regina. Who's going to punt for this team, Ed?
Well, I think it's still going to be Justin Medlock. The draft pick, Felix Menard-Briere, he's got a really good leg, and he's a very good directional punter. He's a lot better field goal kicker than I think he gets credit for, but he's also got a year of college eligibility left. I'd be surprised if they split the duties up between Medlock and Menard-Briere. I think Medlock was a satisfactory punter last year. He's working on it still. He's trying a couple of different approaches that Troy would probably really appreciate. It's almost like a helicopter kick can set to the corner. The ball goes sideways instead of end over end. It's interesting. He's always experimenting. So I would be, let's put it this way, I'd be shocked if Justin Medlock wasn't handling all the kicking chores on when they open the season. But this kid is pretty damn good.
Looking out west, Ed, to the guys that wear green and white, I remember a time, I've said this a few times on our show, where Cameron walked into the training room when Ross Hutchinson was the trainer and said, "Ross, my back's tight. What's going on?" And Ross said, "Look at your birth certificate." And you look at Vince Young, 34 years old, hamstring injury, didn't practice yesterday, said he won't be there to take part. The team has said he won't play in the game on Saturday. Your thoughts on, so far, what you've heard maybe about Vince Young and if you really expect anything to come of that situation this year?
Yeah, I guess I was skeptical going in, and what we've seen in the last week makes me even more skeptical. Some of the comments from Chris Jones yesterday after it was confirmed that he wouldn't play Saturday were pretty telling to me. He said, you know, basically that Vince has been around football long enough to know his situation, and it's, you know, you can't make the team if you're hurt. And I know there's a lot of conspiracy theories out there right now that think that this is Vince Young's way of making a not-so-graceful exit, but maybe a less sort of severe one than being cut. You know, everything I've read and heard from their training camp in Saskatoon is that Kevin Glenn has clearly been the number one, but that Brandon Bridge and Brian Bennett from the former Bomber have been right there with two and three, and then Vince has been all over the map. There's days when he's getting picked off two or three times and other days where he looks like you can see something of his Pro Bowl days or his days at Texas, but as you said, Troy, you can't hide the fact that he's 34. If, you know, if he was 25, 26, 29 even and had a hamstring injury, you might be a little bit more patient to let him recover. But what's the long-term goal here with this guy? If he can't start and if he's not your second or third best quarterback, then what's the point? And I don't know where this is headed, but I think a lot of us can see what's on the horizon for him.
Hey, Ed, you would have covered Mike O'Shea as a player in the league for years and years and years, and then, you know, a special teams coach, and now as a head coach, and he got the extension, and that was up in the air for a long time, given where this organization was and the direction they were going. What have you seen from him now that he has the extension? He's sort of established himself as a player in this league, as an assistant special teams coach, and now as a head coach.
You know, Jim, that's a good question. I just think he seems a lot more comfortable now at that, and I mean, that's stating the obvious, I guess. The team is better. I think he's got a couple years of coaching under his belt. I think, it's difficult for a guy to go from being a position coach or a coordinator to kind of running the whole show, and maybe that took a while for Mike to kind of understand that you've got to trust the people around you and you know, be more of an administrator. I just see a guy that's a lot more comfortable in the gig, and, there's nobody that puts more pressure on himself than him, and he's got high standards. Everybody wants to win a Grey Cup and end the drought and all that stuff. But for me, it's just, I guess if I could see anything from him, it's comfort and maybe growth in the position, too, since he first took over.
Really appreciate your time, Ed. Good stuff. And listeners can log on to BlueBombers.com to get more insight on the individuals taking part in this year's training camp as well as the upcoming Bombers season. Thanks for doing this, Ed.
Right on, boys. Have a good day.
Thanks so much, Ed.
See ya.
We talked about if you miss training camp or not. You don't, but as a kicker, it's got to be different.
Oh, it's incredibly different, man.
Like, I don't want to say boring, but, like, with so many players and so many things to get to in such a short period of time, you guys must be just sort of on your own a bit.
Well, your whole life as a kicker, you're on your own a bit. Like, in college, for me, it was remarkably so. And that was my first foray into really playing, serious football. And I tell people this, they don't believe me. I tell football people they really don't believe me. I did not go to a single team meeting of any sort as a kicker in college.
Really?
Not for the punt team, not for the kickoff team. I didn't really even know what meetings were after when I came to the Bombers because I never had to go to one.
So how would crazy you do when these meetings would take place?
I was just in the gym. I was working out like crazy, and I'd just go kick on my own. They really didn't. It was just it was the strangest thing. Like, now looking back at it, back then it was the norm, right? I was just on my own, and you're just really like the whole kicker to the football team relationship thing was really like in the States, it's really like that. Like, it's just, and it's probably changed right now a little bit, but back when I was in school, it was, how crazy is that?
That is crazy.
To never go to a single team meeting of any sort, just leave that Canadian kid alone and we'll see you on game day sort of thing. And then, of course, a few kicks on practice, but funny stuff. I remember one of my first practices, the defensive coordinator coach with this big ex-linebacker from Wyoming. And he had this like massive Lanny McDonald type mustache, and he was a big scary dude, man. Would always wear a cowboy hat, and I was sitting on my butt on the sideline just watching practice, and he's screaming, "Hey, kicker, take a knee!" And I'm looking, I'm going, "What's this guy saying to me? I don't know what the hell he's saying. Kicker, take a knee!" And he starts walking faster and faster towards me, right? I'm like, "What? Take a knee, sir? I don't know what you're talking about." He's like, "Take a knee!" Because in football, you have to, when you're watching practice, if you're not standing, you'd simply kneel on one knee.
Yeah.
Right? But in soccer, that's, I've got no idea what the heck he's talking about. It's quite funny.
Hence the song by Adam Sandler.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Yeah. BlueBombers.com for more on the Bombers and, of course, our pregame coverage here on TSN 1290 Saturday at 6 prior to the first preseason game of this season in Regina against the Rough Riders. We'll take a break back in the Stanley Cup Final. Game 5 tonight, we'll hear from Phil Kessel on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Pick up your official TSN 1290 discount card today. Hit the greens throughout the summer with great 2-for-1 deals and a multitude of Manitoba golf courses, including the Meadows Golf and Country Club, Winkler Centennial Golf Course, Scottswood Lynx Golf Course, Lavarande Golf Course, and the Steinbeck Flying Club, as well as Bell Acres Golf and Country Club, just to name a few. There are many more. Book a tee time and show your card for great rates. Cards are only $34.95 each. Some restrictions apply. To purchase your card and for a complete list of participating courses, visit tsn1290.ca. Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Finals tonight. Phil Kessel needs to put up some points. He spoke with the media yesterday for the first time prior to the season series starting. John Liu from TSN tees it up. Then you'll hear from Phil Kessel. Sidney Crosby weighs in on Kessel, and so does Pens coach Mike Sullivan. We'll start with John Liu of TSN.
Phil Kessel has had a quiet cup final. He hasn't spoken publicly since media day prior to game one, and he's mired in a six-game goal drought with only one assist in the final. But on Wednesday, Kessel broke his silence with strong conviction that he's on the verge of snapping out of his slump.
I had a couple chances, too. You know, I missed the net a couple times where, you know, I probably should have hit the net, and you never know what happens. And, you know, it's how it goes. It's hockey, right? I think you got to just keep going, and, you know, we'll see how it goes.
You know, when he shoots, good things happen, you know, whether it's, you know, him scoring or for other guys. So he's got a great shot. It's hard for goalies to handle. And, you know, if he's getting those looks, I like the chance of the puck going in.
Phil brings physical speed. He could really skate. And so he has that ability to create separation and can be a threat off the rush or take defensemen wide. I think he brings that aspect to the game. I think he thinks the game quickly. So I think he processes the game quickly. And as a result, I think that's an indication of why he's as good a passer as he is, because he sees the opportunities and he's able to execute on them.
Mike Sullivan, Sidney Crosby, then Phil Kessel, and started with John Liu. Is he poised to break out in your mind, or is this series... I mean, they need these contributions from guys. Phil was so instrumental in the Cup Championship last year.
Well, here we are now. Don't ask how. The time to leave was kind of now for all you hip fans on the verge. As soon as I heard that, I just was brought there for a moment. But is he going to bust through? I don't know. I don't know. I don't think he needs to bust through for the Penguins to win. But, boy, it'd be a nice little touch, wouldn't it, for Pens fans tonight. It's going to be I think the Nashville Predators are just maybe causing him a bunch of trouble, but with not a whole lot of looks, right? Like he's big time behind shots compared to last year during his success in their cup run. But I'm not so sure that you're looking for a team to break through on, and the defensive leanings of the Predators and the master, the Picasso that they can paint some nights, I'm not so sure he's going to break through it. But at the same time, boys, I don't think he needs to. I think the Penguins can go on to win with Kessel being a little bit sleepy.
They don't need him to break through, but if he did...
Some combo Crosby, Malkin, Kessel needs to happen probably, right?
Two out of the three, you mean?
Yeah, like some...
I mean, three out of the three, good night, Gracie, it's yes. Over in six.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing most teams in the NHL can do about that, but...
But the Preds are doing it, right?
They're doing it. The thing with scorers of that nature is by nature, they're so streaky. Mm-hmm. Like that's just kind of the nature of the business, where you'll go through 3-4 game slumps where not a whole lot's working for you. You get one good luck, one goes in, and then look out from that point on.
Especially Phil, right?
One good luck's all he needs. Maybe more so than either Malkin or Crosby. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I really don't think he's the most important player in this series for Pittsburgh. And kind of like Jesse Marshall touched on, you know, like with should Murray or Fleury go in net, it doesn't really matter. If they're not getting out of their zone cleanly, it really doesn't matter who's up front and who's in the back end or who's in net, because they need better production from the back end, not points-wise, but just being able to get out of their zone cleanly.
And I thought they did get that, and Jesse Marshall talked about that a little bit. They got that a little bit better in Game 4, certainly better than in Games 1, 2, and 3. And, boys, to me, if Sid Crosby has the night tonight the way he did in Game 4 and creates the number of scoring opportunities, then the Penguins win tonight.
But I think it is instrumental. I think he's the one guy that was... I've said it before. I'm a big believer third line wins you championships. If he and Cullen can get going, he was instrumental last year. I thought he should have won the Conn Smythe last year. And if he doesn't start scoring, like Crosby was outstanding in Game 4. And I know Gensel missed a few open nets, but I think they need that. They need Kessel tonight. They need him in the next 2 to 3 games if they want to win this. They need him to produce, is what I should say.
I don't think they do. I think Sid Crosby all by himself, if he replicates the game he had in Game 4, the Penguins should have been up by a couple or three maybe long before this game broke open the way it did, if Gensel was a snake bit there around the net. If Sid Crosby's the dominant force again tonight that he was in Game 3, Game 4, I think the Penguins are going to be fine and dandy.
And I would say if Malkin is on, usually you find the Penguins are on too. Because you always expect there's consistency from Crosby, right? Where, you know, for the most part, he's going to get his chances and he's going to set up players around him. But once Malkin gets going, that's when the Penguins become near unstoppable. So if I'm the Preds, I look more towards trying to slow down 71 and keep him off the score sheet and maybe take your chances a little bit with Kessel on that third line.
By the way, I don't think I was back from vacation when this happened, but I thought it was hilarious when PK Subban and Malkin got into it, had the scrap or whatever you want to call that, and they were in the box, and PK was giving him the wink, and Malkin's eye roll and shaking of his head was priceless. Like, instead of being the intense chirping back and forth, you go here, you go there, this is what I think of you, this is what I think of you, just the whole eye roll, and like, you're an idiot. Like, the whole, I thought that was hilarious, and really shows that, like, maybe PK is getting to more than just the Listerine and all that comments. Like, he is getting to guys like Malkin, because it wasn't like the old F you back or whatever. It was the eye roll and the head bob and everything else, and like, just stop it. Anyways, I thought it was an interesting fact of one of the games. We'll take a break here and talk more about tonight's game with Jonathan Davis when he joins the Big Show next on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN is proud to support Canada Soccer's women's national team as they take on Costa Rica tonight, June the 8th at Investors Group Field. Tickets are now on sale through Ticketmaster.ca, where you can keep listening right now and throughout the day today to TSN 1290 for your chance to win tickets. More details available at TSN1290.ca, 780-1290, 12th caller through, and we'll get you a pair of tickets to tonight's action. Desiree Scott, Christine Sinclair, and interesting hearing Desiree Scott on with Hustler in the afternoon ride the other day, and basically in all her media throughout the week in her hometown, bestowing the virtues of the young Canadian players and how the youth is being served here and how dynamic the youth is now that she is one of the veteran players on the team.
Yeah, it's so cool. That whole program is really such a wonderful gift for those that love soccer, and I will never forget. Like, it's so cool, guys, to me, in coaching young boys for the last number of years. And when the Canadian women, and to hear one time at a practice the boys debating on which women's jersey they were going to get to wear as the women were getting ready for the Olympic Games was something I never would have heard of 10, 20 years ago. And just the way they've captured the imagination of us as a nation, it's fantastic. This is a much go-to tonight.
For sure. And I remember the first international game here, the friendly between Canada and the USA, and was talking with Desiree just about how does it feel to be a role model? Mm-hmm. And she goes, to be honest with you, like the Buchanans on the team, I think she was 17 or 18 at the time or whatever, said, I'm in awe of them. Like I was never that good at that young age. So it's a great mix. And it continues to prove the youth and the talent that is on this national team, as well as the Sinclairs and the Desiree Scott. So yeah.
Desiree Scott is top shelf, first class the way.
Yeah. Great athlete and great mentor for young girls and athletes as a whole. 780-1290, 12th caller through, will get a pair of tickets to tonight's Canada Soccer Women's National Team taking on Costa Rica at IGF Field. More hockey talk now, back to Stanley Cup Finals, and continuing the hockey talk, I should say. And we're going to do it with our good friend from West Coast Hockey, Jonathan Davis. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing very well. Game 5, was it too long of a wait?
Well, I mean, look, from a fan's perspective, you know, yeah, you'd love them to play every other day or every day. But I think, you know, to get the best hockey, I think the wait is worth it. And we have a better opportunity to get better hockey with these guys getting a little bit of rest.
JD, for those claiming that Pittsburgh is Pekka Rinne's kryptonite, are you buying that? Or is it just the way things have worked out in a fairly small sample size?
Well, I mean, he seems, you know, he's definitely been their kryptonite at the PPG Paints Arena or whatever it was, in, you know, the Igloo or whatever you want to call it. I mean, what, 0-5 in Pittsburgh? And, you know, but he's turned it around. I mean, that Pekka Rinne that we saw in Game 4 was nothing short of spectacular and, you know, shows you why that if Nashville is to win the Stanley Cup, that he will be the Conn Smythe Trophy winner.
Jonathan, the other net is, this is what happens, I feel, when we have this much time in a series. And I don't think Matt Murray is to blame for any of the 8 goals he's given up in the past 2 games. Mike Sullivan says goaltending is not a reason why we've lost either one of those games. But yet then we look at Marc-Andre Fleury and we question. And much like any player comes in on the fourth line or maybe a fifth, sixth defenseman, just to change things up when you're losing, the question comes up, do you change goaltenders because they've both played so well? Going with Matt Murray, I think it's the right choice, but what do you think? Can you change a goaltender given the situation and how well both have played, much like you could bring in an energy guy to sort of stop the losing streak?
Yeah, I think it's a much different philosophy when it comes to the goaltender, and especially when you've got, you know, a goaltender that you believe is your clear-cut number one. And there's no question that, you know, while Marc-Andre Fleury has a Stanley Cup ring on his resume, Matt Murray is the number one goalie in the eyes of Mike Sullivan. And just like you could not have gone to UC Soros in Game 3, and you can't go to Marc-Andre Fleury. I mean, Matt Murray is your goaltender of the present. He's the goaltender of the future. And so, no, I don't see a change. And I understand it. I mean, it's something that I've kind of tossed around in my head and thought about, you know, could you make this move? But I just don't see it being the right move. And, yes, he could have, you know, maybe he could have been better on a couple of goals. And we've seen that Nashville has attacked that glove side of Matt Murray. But this is the guy that you have to go with. And I just don't see making a change because, guys, look, if you make a change and Marc-Andre Fleury loses Game 5 tonight, then what do you do for Game 6?
JD, there's a fair amount of activity and rumor swirling around some of the West Coast teams. Let's touch first on the 3-year extension to Tyler Toffoli. You like the move?
Oh, I love it. And Rob Blake, you know, should be getting an A-plus for the job that he's done so far this summer. You know, he signs Tyler Toffoli to a 3-year, $4.6 million deal. Previous to that, you know, he signs Tanner Pearson to 4 years at $3.75. And by doing both those deals, you know, both these players don't give up any of their UFA years. So they'll go in, you know, they'll finish their contracts as UFAs. And, yeah, I think, you know, look, it's the way it should go. Play, you know, you need to earn that contract. And so if they had gone, you know, anything longer, they would have had to buy UFA years, which means that you're going to have to pay more for those deals. So, yeah, I think it's a great deal for both players. I think it's a great deal for the Kings. And, you know, in the case of Tyler Toffoli, hey, look, 2 years down the road, if he has two great back-to-back seasons, then he'll get his money and the Kings can renegotiate with him. But, you know, he's really had one good year in Los Angeles. 2 years ago, 31 goals. Last year was 16 goals in an injury-plagued season. So, I think it's a great move by Rob Blake and the LA Kings.
What about with the Anaheim Ducks and the defensemen that they have and when they're talking about, you know, I read in the Hockey News, and we all did this past week and discussed it on the show, that Jacob Silverberg can end up in Las Vegas because of how the contracts and everything needs to be protected, the young defenseman in Anaheim. Sammy Vatanen, number one on TSN.ca's list of being traded. Who goes in Anaheim? What do you think plays out in the next 2 weeks prior to the draft?
Well, yeah, it's very interesting. And the belief has been that Kevin Bieksa will allow the Anaheim Ducks to expose him in the expansion draft. And so if that's the case, that allows Anaheim to protect Cam Fowler, Sammy Vatanen, and Hampus Lindholm, barring any trades beforehand. And things get a little more complicated with the injuries to both Vatanen and Lindholm, who could be gone anywhere from, you know, 5 to 8 months following surgery for torn labrum. So, you know, that puts them back somewhere between, you know, October and November. But really everything gets predicated on Bieksa allowing himself to be exposed, because then that way you do protect Jakob Silverberg. And so Josh Manson would be the likely candidate to be lost in the expansion draft.
Your thoughts on the rumor and the potential interest of the Kings in Evander Kane?
Well, it shows you a totally different philosophy with this new management group headed by Rob Blake and Luke Robitaille, because in the Dean Lombardi years, this was a deal that would never happen. Dean was, you know, definitely behind the scenes, never public, but it was quite clear from talking to people in the Kings organization that Evander Kane was not going to be a guy that would fit in that Los Angeles locker room. But, hey, look, I think what we saw from Evander Kane last year, we saw a maturing process. He played through a lot of injury. His numbers were great. You know, 28 goals last year. I believe 15 of his 28 goals came at 5-on-5. I'm not sure why Buffalo would trade him. I know that they need help on the back end, but I think this is a guy that you more want to build around than to trade. And from the Kings' standpoint, the one other factor is, guys, is that he's got 1 year left in his contract, and Los Angeles is done trading for rentals. They're not going to give up an asset, whether it be a Jake Muzzin or an Alec Martinez, to get a guy who's got 1 year left on his deal. The only way that the Evander Kane deal works in Los Angeles is if they're able to negotiate an extension prior to the deal being completed.
Jonathan Davis from West Coast Hockey joining us on the Big Show, TSN 1290, 43 minutes past the hour at West Coast HKY is where you can follow him on Twitter. So much debate the past 6 months and so many minds being changed about what Vegas is going to want and how they're going to approach this. Are they going to be competitive in the first year or two? Is that the mindset that you have, like many others have sort of changed to? It's not a development process, 5 to 7 years, that they're going to try and be competitive the first year or two?
I really don't see them being much better than what we saw from the Colorado Avalanche. I mean, at least from a standpoint of wins. I can't see them, you know, topping, you know, the 30-win plateau this year. But, you know, look, they're going to be in a unique situation where, you're going to have a lot of, you know, 4, 5, 6, you know, type defensemen and a lot of, you know, bottom six forwards. So, you know, that can make you competitive, but I think ultimately, you know, you're still going to be a goal short in most games that you play. It's interesting to hear George McPhee talk now that he's willing to take on some bad contracts in exchange to get some additional draft picks, because that's really what, you know, this team, you know, is going to need to build on our draft picks. So, look, this is a team that will be competitive, or I think has the ability to challenge for a playoff spot maybe, you know, 4 years down the road. But, you know, coming out of the gate, I still think it's a team that on most nights will be one goal short. But that could still make them competitive on most nights.
JD, Alan Walsh is a personality as an agent with the league. He's fairly active on social media and often outspoken. He has represented talent here for the Winnipeg Jets, and he's got an interesting reputation. And your thoughts on Alan Walsh?
Well, I'm a big fan of Alan Walsh, guys. And I have, you know, Alan's based here in Los Angeles, so I've had a lot of interaction with him over the years. And, you know, look, Alan is a guy that, you know, does a lot of talking for his players. But, you know, let's not be mistaken that anything that Alan puts out on social media as it relates to any one of his players, his guys know what's going on before that's put out there. I have no problem with it. This is a guy, you know, was a former district attorney. He's dealt with some pretty tough people over the years. I think he can more than handle himself in the hockey community. I think he's great for the game.
Jonathan, before we let you go, what's your feeling on Game 5 tonight?
Well, you know, home teams have been able to hold serve. You know, I thought Pittsburgh played, you know, did a lot of good things in Game 4. And, you know, Sidney Crosby, you know, if his line mates could have had a lot better finish, we'd be talking about how Sidney Crosby was coming off a 3 or 4 point night instead of just a 1 point night. So I still think that, you know, there's more talent on the Pittsburgh side. Very impressed with what Nashville has done. But I think the home team holds serve tonight. And regardless, can't wait for Game 6 on Sunday when the Cup will be in the house in Nashville.
Yeah, that'll be an exciting time as well on Sunday. Should be good tonight as well. Jonathan, always appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this, and enjoy the game this evening.
Take care, guys. Always a pleasure.
Thanks so much, JD. Take care, brother.
We'll tee up Game 5 and the Boss Pizza fan line and everything else. Brian Burke, get your thoughts on the Bombers as we move into our next segment on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to be a media sponsor for MTS Super Spike July 21st and 22nd at Maple Grove Rugby Park. Registration is now open and event tickets for non-participants are on sale now. Taking the stage this year is multi-award-winning Sam Roberts Band, amongst many other acts. Proceeds from this event will be supporting Kids Sport and the True North Youth Foundation. More information is online at tsn1290.ca. The Big Show with Jim Tolt, Trey Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Boss Pizza fan line open in exactly 8 minutes' time, as it's 52 minutes past the hour on another gorgeous day here in Winnipeg. Might get a little bit of rain, but expected to get up near 30 again today. Summer is officially here. We will, once again, 780-1290. Boss Pizza fan line will be open. You can text us, 1290-90, with standard message rates applying. Lots to get to, including Game 5 tonight. Stanley Cup, Pittsburgh hosting Nashville. Who do you guys like? Who are you going with? Who are you picking?
It is a real tough call. I lean towards, in this best of three series now, I lean towards the home team just because of the inherent advantage that you get with that, but certainly don't feel very confident or wouldn't put the farm on it or anything like that, for crying out loud. Nashville's been wickedly impressive during this entire run. Game four was the first time the Penguins were able to sort of keep pace and apply the same amount of pressure and possession as the Preds. You wonder if that happens again tonight. The storylines of Murray looking for some traction and to have sort of a breakout game in this series after a couple of starts where he's given up more goals than he would like, and then the whole Pekka-Rinne thing in Pittsburgh as his kryptonite is quite intriguing as well. And the lunch bucket blue collar forward group that you got with Nashville, are they going to continue just getting help from wherever they can? And can Nashville keep at bay the overwhelming skilled players of the Pens in Crosby, Malkin, and Kessel? I'm going to lean towards no. I think Sid Crosby is going to have a similar game to as he did in Game 4. Remember, Game 3 coming off zero shots. The game previous in Game 2, one shot, I believe, is what happened there. He and Malkin combined, I think, for two shots over the course of those couple of games. What Crosby did last game, guys, was sort of reestablish himself in the series to me. He served up some tasty dishes, and Gensel just couldn't quite finish, but the Pens could have very easily had two, three more goals just by what Crosby was doing out there. So I lean towards the Penguins tonight, but it will be something as well from an entertaining standpoint if the Preds can steal one and then have an opportunity to wrap it up at Bridgestone Arena. The theatrics involved with that possibility would be well worth the watch as well.
Any hockey fan, I think, outside of Pittsburgh should hope for that sort of a result. Just like, and whatever happens, happens, but just give them a chance to get it on home ice at least, just to see if they can amp up the craziness. I'm cheering for the Preds, but I'm a little worried in this game, to be honest, for a lot of the reasons you said. And Pekka-Rinne's numbers in Pittsburgh, like sometimes athletes just don't play good in certain places, and there's not really a good reason for it, but whatever it is, sometimes you know, and it doesn't have to be, you know, like a professional athlete, but there's certain barns you go to in the city here where you go there and it just doesn't feel
bad luck or bad outcomes.
Doesn't feel right, and you just feel negative and lousy going into the game, and it plays out that way. And Rinne's .865 save percentage against Pittsburgh, or in Pittsburgh, it actually improved despite how poorly he played in Game 2 and Game 1, it actually improved during those first two in Pittsburgh. So I just don't think Rinne's going to be up to the level that he was in Nashville, and I would have to lean towards Pittsburgh in this one.
It's also important to remember that in Games 1 and 2, it was just a couple little pockets of time, like 3 and 5 minutes, where there was just an avalanche of goals sort of thing that overwhelmed the Preds in games that they should have won in both of those games. So will Pittsburgh find that sort of magic pop, pop, pop that they had in Games 1 and 2 to fill the net like that?
I am going with the Nashville Predators. I think they're going to win this game and then hang on for Sunday. Nashville might need to take next week off. I don't know, but I just have a feeling that Nashville is going to come through here on this game, but it's going to be really exciting. Who do you have in Game 5? 780-1290. NBA Final last night, 118-113 for the Warriors, are up 3-0. Is this over? Who do you like in that series? And, of course, Brian Burke was in Calgary yesterday speaking at a dinner or a luncheon or a breakfast at the Canadian Club, and he had these things to say about the new arena deal not getting any public money in Calgary.
What Ken King said was, we're not going to make a threat to move. We're just going to move if we don't get the deal we need. And you're saying that's fine.
No, I'm not saying that it's fine.
Well, you just said Murray Edwards should pay for the building himself. The math works fine. They figured it out in Edmonton, but we're smarter here. They figured out public money is useful toward rejuvenating downtown and making a statement and keeping jobs, but we're smarter than that here. They figured it out in Manitoba, but we're smarter in Alberta. No, it's not just my view on this. Taxpayers all over Canada have figured this out. Municipalities all over Canada have figured this out. Most intelligent people get this. Sorry, with my learned friend, I think most people get this.
And the response there was most intelligent people know how to do up a tie. It got heated. I don't like the way Brian Burke said this, but I'm wondering on the Boss Pizza fan line 780-1290 and from you gentlemen, do you agree with the sentiment that, you know, these facilities help the city, help the economy, help, you know, with taxes and everything else? Or do you think there's absolutely no reason professional sports organizations should get public money to build and house their teams?
You can't answer that question unless you can attach the bottom line, right? And that's real tough to come by. How do you measure the impact of such a facility to a city? And all the spin-offs, economic spin-offs that exist, the trickle-down effect, the jobs, etc., etc. It's real hard to measure that. And certainly I'm not capable of doing that in this situation, but I'm sure that studies are out there to do so. From a bird's eye view and just a citizen of this city, I would certainly think that the MTS Center, what's the new name, Wix?
Bell MTS Place.
Bell MTS Place, my apologies. Its existence has made quite an impact. We had a downtown that was in dire need of rejuvenation. I think it's safe to say that the new arena has played a pretty good hand in getting that going. And then all the things that come into play, all the intangibles and tangibles that have positive effect on the community. But what is that bottom line? I'm not sure what it is. One thing I do know is that when Brian Burke is going off in there and, you know, entering into the sort of the political foray of trying to appeal to those types of decision makers and people of influence in Calgary, that a guy like Ken King, who's the president and CEO of Calgary Sport and Entertainment Corp, which owns the Flames, is probably puts his head in his hands and starts to cry a little bit. I'm not sure that Brian Burke is the best face or voice to be leading that charge.
Yeah, we got to go here, but I think it's beyond ridiculous that taxpayers have to pay billionaires. Let's keep that in mind. The majority of these guys are billionaires. We have to pay billionaires money out of our own pockets to help fund and pay for their toys.
780-1290 and the Boss Pizza fan line next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to support the fifth and final HSC Foundation Celebrity Human Race. It's your chance to race around Winnipeg, competing in challenges and puzzles with your team's celebrity, September 22nd and 23rd. The money raised allows the HSC Foundation to improve care for Manitoba families with research initiatives, cutting-edge medical equipment, state-of-the-art facilities. To learn more or to register, visit TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, and the Boss Pizza fan line. Who do you have in Game 5 tonight, the Stanley Cup Finals? Is the NBA Finals over with the Warriors up 3-0? Can the Cavs get on the board in this one? And, of course, Brian Burke's comments in Calgary yesterday. Do you agree or disagree with Brian Burke on the fact that these facilities for teams rejuvenate downtown, help with the economy, create jobs, all that kind of stuff, or should no public money go to that? Anything and everything else as well on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Darren, you're kicking us off today. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, thanks.
Good. I think I got Nashville tonight. As for Brian Burke, I think everything Brian Burke does is calculated and pre-planned. So all he did was generate a conversation and reignite this kind of put this back on kind of the forefront for Calgary, and he accomplished what he wanted to do, so I'm not going to put too much thought into it. But my only other question, guys, is
I usually love to talk Jets, but I'll ask a different question today. What do we got to do to get Rick Ralph to stop talking about his pillow?
Do you know what? I was filling in for Hustler yesterday in the warm-up, and he came in with Michael Remus's wedding gift. and the wedding gift,
come on,
was not one, not two, but four my pillows. And I was like, now you have some throw pillows, Remo. And Remus was like, what are those? Those are the pillows, I said, now that you're married, that you'll never use but have to move every night before you go to bed. But he got four my pillows, so there you go. Good stuff, Darren. Do you? I understand what you're saying about Brian Burke, but what's your thoughts on the whole idea of, you know, these facilities are more than just helping, you know, millionaires have hockey teams and whatnot? When you add in the concerts, the revenue, the jobs, the tax revenue, what are your thoughts on public money going to a building like that?
I think public money is mandatory to go to these buildings. What I would like to see, and what we see all the time here in Winnipeg, is if they're going to make a budget and they're going to tell the public what it's going to cost, they'd stick to that. What I think drives the public nuts is when it's like, oh, sorry, we need another extra $50 million, or, hey, sorry, the Winnipeg Stadium is damaged and it wasn't built properly. We're going to have to go to the taxpayers for more money. So that, I think, is more of the bigger issue. But set a plan, set a budget. I think it's mandatory that you're going to have to see taxpayers support it. I overall think it is fantastic for these downtown areas to try to rejuvenate these downtowns and for everything, like you said, everything that it brings to the city. But just get the budget right.
If public money does go to a facility like this, every taxpayer should get a MyPillow.
That's a great deal. That's a great deal. There and Rick go. Ralph will probably be building some cottage in Lake of the Woods for the proceeds he gets for it, I guess.
Darren, thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
Have a great day, guys.
Yeah, care, and man. Darren also has the Preds in Game 5. Barry, you're on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Hey, boys. How you doing? It's been a while.
Yeah, how are you?
I'm good, man. Correct me if I'm wrong. The 1984, when they built the Saddle Dome, that was for the Olympics. Is that correct?
I'm not too sure. I know it was going to be used for the Olympics. It was one of the main reasons that it was, but it was also for the Flames. The Flames were playing in the Calgary Corral at the time,
right?
Home of Stampede Wrestling, by the way.
I remember that, too. I lived in Calgary at that time. But correct me if I'm wrong, but federal money went towards building the Saddle Dome, which means taxpayers of Manitoba paid some of that money. Now, the building they're trying to build in Calgary now, it's more than just a hockey arena. They're trying to outdo Edmonton by building a whole sports complex kind of a thing. And any federal budget money that they're going to get, because they already gave Edmonton a lot of money, and we own some of that because we're taxpayers of Manitoba. It's the same thing. When they get federal funding, besides the provincial, when they get federal funding, we in Manitoba and Saskatchewan people are all paying for this building. I'm not in favor of it. I think it's a bunch of crock, because look what happened in Ottawa when everybody starts saying, what's wrong with Ottawa? Nobody's going to the games. Well, who the hell are you charging $200 and $300 a ticket, man? It's gotten way out of whack right now. We have people that are sleeping on the streets, and we're trying to fund this kind of stuff. I'm a sports nut, but this is ridiculous.
Forget the federal money. What do you think of the city of Calgary? Like, should the city of Calgary, with the benefits a building like that does for the city and the jobs it creates, do you feel like the city of Calgary should put in some public money?
In that aspect, I do. In that aspect, because it will generate a little bit more activity downtown. I do not believe Calgary has the same situation downtown gang-wise as we do and everything like that, and we need to re-energize. I grew up in the 70s where on the weekends everybody went downtown. Downtown was a bubbling, exciting place to be, but there's not a need for that anymore. So to spend millions and millions and millions of dollars on that is, to me, is crazy. And to build a hockey arena where the owners are quite capable of, you know, I just think it's totally wrong, especially the way the economy is with people today.
See, I have a tweet here from somebody listening that says, so then if the owners of the Flames put the money into this, should they get all the tax revenue off the building? Like, say there is no public money going into it, and if we all want these million, billion-dollar owners to foot the bill, then should they get the benefits that it brings into the downtown?
Well, I don't think so, man. You still would need to pay property taxes and all the rest of that sort of stuff, right?
I agree. Barry, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. On the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290 on the Big Show, 12 minutes past the hour. Who's next?
We'll get William to hang on just one sec, but we'll go to Ian here.
Ian, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. So Burke, of course, does not represent his organization's thoughts on these things because, you know, obviously they're sophisticated and his thoughts on it is not sophisticated. It's very basic. I think the answer to this is this. You're absolutely right. Some city will give them money. Okay. So what that means is we have to be realistic and cities have to be willing to consider what to do. Having said that, that does not mean they have to agree to every deal. What it sounded like was that Calgary, what they were asking for in Calgary, was a really, really rich deal. And Calgary rightfully and tactically and negotiationally said, no, I don't think so. Doesn't mean that they're saying no, never. It just means they're not saying yes to that deal. And that's going to be a process. And I think that's how you have to treat these things. The idea that we should never pay into these things, that's not realistic. The thought that, well, there's people in the streets, so therefore we shouldn't be paying into these streets, that's not realistic, and that kills the point. You're going to have, you know, these are not zero-sum games. They are games that everybody should profit from. The cities have to make sure that they are profiting from them. I think you can look to Glendale to see a situation where the city is being very badly used, and they made bad deals.
Yeah, good points, Ian.
Thanks.
Take care, man.
Yeah,
it's very controversial. There's no question about it, right?
You've
got to be very careful, and it's a very controversial, sensitive subject. We're seeing teams in the NFL, communities passing up the opportunity to invest and use a lot of public money and all the rest of it, right? It's a massive issue. And you wonder if ultimately, because you hear a lot of people talk about the salaries involved with the players, cost of the tickets, things that have grown exorbitant, like just remarkable exponential jumps in salaries and mind-blowing numbers for those of us who live much different lives to come to an understanding of the tens of millions of dollars in baseball, the hundreds of millions, football, same sort of stuff. At some point in time, economically, is there a readjustment with all this? And a lot of it also is included in the grandiose sort of venues that the guys play in and all the rest of it. Like in a macroeconomic sense, at some point in time, there's going to be a profound shift in pro sport. Do you guys agree with that?
I don't know. I don't know if there'll be a shift because, you know, some callers mentioned the ticket prices. They're being bought. Like, they're...
Yeah, fair.
I mean,
supply and demand takes care of that.
Somebody told me on the weekend in Nashville, they're selling concourse tickets for $300, not the $80 they were in Edmonton, and they're selling out.
Yeah, fair.
And so, like... I understand even here at True North, and we had a caller a couple weeks ago said Mark Chipman gets some tax breaks and all this. And I also say, well, okay, but like look at the cabs around MTS Center, whether it's Tim and Faith last night at the concert, whether it's the Jets game. Look at the businesses around there.
Cirque du Soleil
look
being
at
there.
Everything that comes in.
Yeah, and a lot of people, that's much larger than sport, right? When you're including the arts, then you start to get a lot more of the population involved in the benefits.
And you're right, and there's probably people who know specifically the numbers that this generates for the economy and for the community. But then you also add into just what the Jets being here has done for the city. Mm-hmm. Even nationwide and globally, it's hard to put a number on that to say that, you know what, like, to me, if there is public money going into it, it's because you're going to get some back. It's going to be some benefits to it economically. But I do understand the whole thing of, you know, should we be helping them get that cost back over building another hospital so wait times are down or whatever. Like, I know I'm being general here, but so I see both sides of it. But there's no doubt in my mind that a new facility for the Calgary Flames or for the Winnipeg Jets, for the Edmonton Oilers, is going to be a benefit to the city, including the taxpayers who will never set foot in that building. Mm-hmm. You're going to reap some benefits from that. But I understand the public money, and we're talking about gentlemen who are going to be and are making hundreds of millions of dollars off these teams.
Yeah.
So it is a great debate for sure. William, we'll get to you before we have to take our first break. You're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Hey there. Just a comment and then a question. What you guys were talking about this week about starting the NHL season early. Like the athletes this day and age come into training camps in such great shape. They know they're top 30 players. Why not shorten training camp by a week and start it 2 weeks early? Because, you know, the focus that you guys talked about was the interest in cities that are still in the playoffs. I don't think that's an issue. If your team's in the playoffs, you're truly engaged, like full-time. It's the everybody else, the NHL ratings and the interest. Because let's face it, us Winnipeggers, we're all true hockey people, but how many people are actually going to sit inside on 25 degrees tonight and want to watch hockey? It's just, I don't know, it's just they lose their appeal after main long weekend. So it would be a double ender for the NHL if they can ever think about that. And my next question is, why does the CFL not start 2 weeks earlier? And then you can have some really, really great football weather for the playoffs and the Grey Cups if it's played in Western Canada.
Yeah, I'll say a month earlier for the CFL. There's no reason in the world why I can't start a month earlier.
We have yet to hear a reason why that wouldn't make sense. Mm-hmm. Honestly, it makes too much sense for the CFL not to push their schedule up earlier.
We took a survey that we were saying yesterday. About 2,000 people responded, and 80% wanted it moved up a month.
Yeah, I don't understand why not either. A shortening training camp, they have to fit those games in. I think there's too many preseason games in my mind, but they fit them in because there's money to be made there. And the way they play six or seven preseason games now in the rookie tournament, there's just I don't think there's a lot. But I do think it could move up. I agree with you.
I spoke to you just and remembering how the physical demands on the players right now and a lot of the scheduling. I spoke to a young player who had just gotten home about a week ago, and he is expected to report on the 24th of this. He just got home a week ago from playing, right? And now on the 24th of this month, he's expected in at development camp.
Yeah.
So there's like zero downtime for so many of these guys.
I think the average off season for a professional hockey player in the National Hockey League or the American Hockey League is 3 weeks, and then you get back into your training and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's much like a job. We mostly get 3 to 4 weeks holidays. We'll get back to more of your calls on the Boss Pizza Fan Line 780-1290 when the Big Show returns.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Back on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 here on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Jim, Troy, and Brandon, and Mike, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good, thanks.
I just want to touch on the Joel Armia debate.
Sure.
I think there's no way we can let him go, because we let Michael Furley go, and everyone's complained for 2 years that we let him go. He's our best penalty killer, and we need to keep improving in special teams, so I would say I still say we have to do a move or whatever, so we go 7-3-1 and not this 4-4 stuff, and figure out a deal with Vegas or whatever we have to do. But Joel Armia has to be protected. He's just coming into his own. He shows signs of brilliance, but his stick work and his defensive play is amazing. So
I agree 100%, man.
So yeah, I think they should try and keep him and do that. I just don't know how it's going to work.
Picks. We were talking yesterday on the short grass. Both of us are sitting in the middle of the fairway, probably, I don't know, 290, somewhere between 290 and 310 out. And
each of you 6 under.
Yeah.
This situation. And whatever you got to, so let's say that they go 7-3-1 and they got to offer Vegas a pick to leave Tyler Myers alone. And say that you offer like a second round pick. And we think that might be enough, or whatever it takes in that situation, it certainly would be worth it, because what typically do the picks – like if it is – whatever you're trading to keep Tyler Myers safe, how often do picks that are second or lower rounds, how often do they really turn out to a player of the same level, you know? So to me, it's just an absolute no-brainer.
Tyler Myers is a first-round pick, 12th overall, and was the Calder winner in the National Hockey League. You think a second-round pick will be enough to not pick him in the expansion draft?
Yeah, because you're giving up. It would be, under this scenario, Marco. Yeah, it's a great contract.
That's what I mean. Like, why would you take a second-round pick when you could get a guy with his experience? Like, why would you, if you're Vegas, take a second-round pick as opposed to getting of a defenseman on that kind of a contract? I don't think a second-round pick is enough.
I
wouldn't do that if I was George McPhee. I would take the player.
Yeah, maybe. But if you're getting a second-round pick in a guy like Marco Dano, you might think twice about that because they have no prospects, right? Yeah. Because you're still selecting a player from the Jets. You're not just getting a second-round pick and that's it. But the whole Armia thing that we kind of talked about was if the Jets go 7-3-1 somehow, Armia is going to be in that 7-forward group.
No question.
So they won't lose him in that scenario. And even in the if they went 4-4, worst case scenario, they have to lose one of their forwards. You know, Vegas would end up taking either Perreault or Lowry, whoever they don't pick. So once again, Armia would be unselected. Like I don't know if I see a scenario where Joel Armia would be plucked from Vegas. They might now, whether it's a trade to somewhere else happens, that's a different thing. But I don't think Armia would end up being picked by Vegas either way.
You know, that 4-4-1, and how much the Jets appear to absolutely treasure Adam Lowry. I just have a lot of trouble believing they're going to go 4-4-1, boys.
Instead of
making a deal, like, there's deals to be made, right? And you've got an abundance of prospects. You've got picks to protect what you have built up to this point in time in such a critical year. I think that we see something pretty imaginative here from Chevy to protect this house.
We got some calls. Thanks for that one, Mike. Jay, you're on the Boss Pizza fan line. We'll try and get you in right before we take a break. Jay?
Hello?
Hi, Jay.
No, it's Mike.
Oh, Mike.
Anyway, I got two questions, quickly. If Jets go 7-3-1, why not buy out Tobias? Like, why just not buy him out?
Well, you still need him.
Why? Why would they need him?
Okay, so you buy him out. Who's playing left D?
Well, who played left D when he was missing the last seven games when they were on a seven-game win streak?
No. Well, how about the games before that? I mean, it's even if Toby Enstrom ends up shifting, they pick up a top four left side D, it'd be real nice to have him as in the 5-6 pairing, right?
Mike, what's the weakness on this team?
The defensive players we have on the team right now.
And is it the left side D more so than the right?
Well, I don't know, because you got Bufflin. Bufflin's pretty weak. Well, I might say it's a total D. I won't even go to...
My point is...
I won't even go say right or left D. I'll just say total D, because our defense... But I'm looking at dollar-wise down the line.
Well, here's my point. You're going to pay a guy $6 million to not play and lose a position at the weakest you're at to keep a forward.
And if you're looking at dollars down the line, this is the final year of the contract.
Yeah, so a bio would actually negatively affect that line of thinking, right? Yeah. Because you'd have to pay, I think, not a lot, but there'd be a couple million against the cap next year as well. And next year is going to be one of those difficult ones because you have Ehlers coming up and a bunch of other guys that are going to need big contracts next year.
That's why I don't think you do it, Mike. Okay, we got to take a break, but we appreciate the call. We'll maybe delve into that a little bit more, and please be patient with us, Clark. And Johnny, we'll get to you after the break, too, on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Stream us on the iHeartRadio app and all your favorite devices, or get a customized playlist to suit your mood or activity, your music, your station's always free. Download the iHeartRadio app today and stream on The Big Show. Jim Tolfe, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki. 780-1290 if you want to weigh in on the conversation, and we're having some good ones. And also you can text 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. May apply depending on your package, but if you want to weigh in on the conversation. Your cell phone package.
I'm sorry, just a juvenile moment over here. Sorry.
We're not going to charge your package. We're going to charge, well, we're not, but the cell phone charge.
Yeah.
Where am I? What am I doing? Why is my tarp off? 780-1290 on The Big Show. Clark, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Morning, boys. How are we today?
Good, thanks. You?
Good, good. I just wanted to touch on the arena in Calgary there.
Sure.
A lot of people have to remember that the mayor of Calgary is basically taking the lead with this and saying that there is no economic benefit to building a new arena. And he's doing this in a Trump-style kind of way where he is vetoing it altogether without a vote with the councillors, with other council in the city. And you know, it's I think that's kind of the big issue right now in the city of Calgary, especially since the mayor built a new music museum downtown, as well as recreating the East Side Village. So he's doing all these projects to build up the economy in Calgary, but at the same time, he's shooting down a new arena, I think, basically because, well, A, either he just doesn't see a need for it and he doesn't think there's no economic benefit, or they're up for election in November for re-election. So I'm not too sure if maybe he's trying to get the voters, if there's enough voters out there that agree with him, that this isn't a good idea. But in the long run, really, if Calgary decides to leave and go somewhere else, that's going to take away 1,500 jobs. And to be frank, I think it's absolutely ridiculous that Calgary has the oldest arena now in the league by 10 years, and they can't even come up with a plan to get something built. And I think it would be a great benefit to the city to build a sports complex where you have a new hockey arena, a new McMahon Stadium. Like, my God, that, like, if there's a stadium that needs to be built, it's McMahon. And then put in a soccer complex. I think it would benefit the whole city altogether, and I don't see why they can't come to an understanding. But first and foremost, the mayor of Calgary needs to get off his high horse and start listening to the people, because right now he is not for it. And I'll leave it at that. Well, and hypothetically, guys, I'll just say, you know, if this situation was happening in Winnipeg right now, and, you know, the arena, you know, 20 years down the road needs to be moved or renovated or whatever, and the mayor says absolutely not because there is no economic benefit, what would you say to that? And I'll leave it at that. Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Clark. I will say two things that are different from when Edmonton first started their arenas is the economy. And I was in Calgary, not this past Christmas, but the one before that, and I was going for lunch with some friends who work downtown, and they were pointing out the buildings where his firm or his company was literally moving into one, and he said the floor above us is leased and the floor below us is leased, and he said the people who rent lease the floor above us aren't even moving into it because they just the economy in their has gone bad, and he said the people beneath us are still paying the lease, but they're not. Or sorry, the above was paying the lease but not even moving into it, and the one below them was not going to pay the lease and not moving in, and he said it's just really bad. Fast forward a year and a half, and like the other thing with this Flames thing, so my point is when Edmonton was doing this, the oil industry, the economy, everything was pretty good. And the bottom has fallen out in Alberta, harshly, specifically in Calgary. And that same friend I went for lunch with a year and a half ago who was telling me this, he's now been laid off from his firm that was in that building. So it's a different economic atmosphere around Calgary than it was when Edmonton went ahead with the decision, which was years ago, to make theirs. And the other thing is Calgary Flames want to build this arena, but they also want to build something beside it, and they want to build this whole strip mall and everything else. I think it might be a different story with the mayor if it was just, we'd like to build a new arena.
Yeah, and the mayor has a great call, Clark.
It is, Clark. Good stuff.
Real good points that you touched on. And the mayor, from what I've seen here, has talked or spoken out about this as well, and the mayor himself is the one that brings up to say that you can't really use the Edmonton deal because that Edmonton deal for the arena might have been right for Edmonton at that time when they desperately needed to revitalize the downtown core, but that's not the case in the Calgary, so you have to find a new model. So, a great point and fantastic call, Clark. You raised a lot of really good points there.
Yeah, and you know, you also raised the question of, you know, why can't they get a deal done? Well, the Calgary Next project is supposed to be costing around $1.8 billion. and the taxpayers would be on the hook for two-thirds of that. So that, like, I this goes back to the whole kind of debate and argument of, like, I get fans not wanting their teams to leave because there's nothing, we've all experienced the heartbreak and the agony of that. But you're talking about two-thirds of $1.8 billion, just over $1 billion that taxpayers have to pay. Like, that's a monster ticket.
I know it's a ways away, boys. But it's imagine the debate that will happen in Winnipeg at some point in time in the decades to come about because this exact same issue will visit the Winnipeg Jets and our city again sometime.
It is an interesting topic for sure. Clark, great call, great points. We thank you for it. Johnny Utah, are you still waiting here?
Yes.
Welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. I wanted to call yesterday, but the surf was too good, and I can't talk and surf at the same time. So
you're probably working on a master plan to pull something off.
There was a caller, a few callers that were kind of talking with the Central Division, and they weren't very factual. They were very passionate, but not factual. And, you know, I just wanted to kind of just lay some facts down. You know, the Central, you know, as you see in the playoffs, is the most competitive division and is the strongest when everybody thought it wasn't. You know, everybody thought the Blues were done, and they finished with 99 points. You know, they were, like, the top team from February 1st on, and I think Jake Allen still has the highest save percentage in all of the playoffs.
Yeah, there was that one caller yesterday saying that the Blackhawks are done, the Blues are done, right? Just kind of opening the doors for the Jets there?
No, I'm saying that the fans out there, they're not they don't understand hockey, like, even in the AHL, like, the next level, like, what's happening out there, you know? This caller Al said that the Blues are finished. Like, they got no future. They didn't have Fabry, Stasny, and Shattenkirk for the run. They did it with their young guys. Their young guys were playing the Wolves. They had the MVP. He won it by 20 points. They have, like, tons of young guys. They have, like, four or five defensemen ready to step up. Like, a lot of the callers are just kind of, they don't know all the facts, and they're making judgments and, like, you know, and stuff like that. But so, like, I think, you know, to look at, like, that division. That division is very well positioned again next year to be the most toughest. Like this year, you know, you had Nashville like, surprise everybody, but it's gonna happen again. Like, it's
One caller, Johnny Utah, just one caller that voiced those opinions.
I bought in on the Chicago because I have no idea how they're gonna make this work under the cap, but I did not buy into the St. Louis. Like, I thought, I agree with you with how far they went in the playoffs and the run they went on, and now they have this coaching regime. I'm not sure that they're going to be as bad as not making the playoffs.
I think they are the team that could fall off in the Central.
St. Louis?
Yeah. Well, and how did they get
you
to
that last year, too, though?
Yeah,
right?
I did, to be fair. But how did they get to the second round of the first place? By getting vastly outplayed and Jake Allen playing out of his mind for four games.
Yeah.
So, and you look at their roster, and it's, yeah, they've got some young talent with Fabry and Barbashev up front and Parayko on the back end, but Jay Bomeister's going to be 34 soon. You look up front, you have Alex Steen, who's going to be 34 soon. And I mean, Jake Allen had a great end to the season, but he almost cost them a playoff spot through the first half. So, like, I don't know. I look at St. Louis's roster and compared to the other teams in the Central. If you're looking for one to fall out, I think the Blues are certainly the pick.
What is Chicago going to do? Like, what are they going to do? And not just this upcoming season, but with that cap problem and the Seabrooks and the Keiths and the
at some point
Taves
in time that'll reach ahead, right? We were talking yesterday about the 6 years left here or more for Kane, Taves, Seabrook, and Keith. I don't know that it's next year, but at some point in time. But they could fall back a little bit, right? The Blues can fall back a little bit. That doesn't necessarily mean that the Jets are going to catch them. Like, I think maybe what Johnny Utah ultimately saying there is that the caller yesterday was wildly optimistic, saying that there's going to be some doors the Jets can walk through in the Central. I'm not so sure about that.
Yeah, maybe one door, and that one door could lead to another playoff failure or a season that doesn't end with a playoff appearance. And you look at the Pacific, too. Like, what if the Kings bounce back?
And he even scoffed about Dallas and the impact of Hitchcock, and that's... Yeah. I think that's a little bit foolish like, I don't know how you...
I mean, the Hawks just got swept in the playoffs and couldn't score goals.
Well, you're going to tag the Hawks with not being able to score goals now, or they just struggled against specifically the Preds there in that situation. But I don't know, anyone going to say the Hawks can't score goals anymore?
I just don't know how it's all going to fit and how it's going to work. And their depth is – I thought they looked a one-dimensional team against Nashville with their top scorers. Mm. So it'll be interesting. Johnny, anything else or he's gone? Thanks for the call, Johnny. Good point. Alan, you're on the big show, TSN 1290. Go ahead.
Hey, I'm just wondering, with the thing with the Dano and the second-round pick, I think it was the second and third round that we got for Setoguchi, right? Like that. Although that was like the worst trade that Chevy did. But
I think it was a second.
It was just a second
pick? I think it was just a second pick, yeah. Or one pick, and it was a second round, I believe. I can look that up for you.
Well, it would be really nice, to even if you had to throw in a third one there, just to keep them away from Lowry. I really think they need to keep Lowry. I would love to see Perreault stay, but I would think if you have to protect one or two, I'd hate to say it, but I'd pick Lowry over Perreault, even though Perreault is such a good all-around player, though.
Yeah, I'm on that camp too. Just and I've said this several times, but and it was a second round pick for Setoguchi, by the way. Just in the fact that, look, I don't dislike Perreault. I like him. I think he's valuable. I think at his age and his $4 million over the next 4 years, when you have Morrissey, Trouba, if you're going to re-sign Brian Little, and all the other things they need to do, I just think that $4 million doesn't fit. So, Adam Lowry, to me, even if he becomes the next Brian Boyle, is never going to cost you more than $2 million a year. And so I just think that that fits with all the other signings they need. But the optimal thing for me is to keep them both.
I don't know about that. Adam Lowry is never going to cost you more than $2 million a year. If Adam Lowry starts scoring 20 goals a year, he's going to cost you more than that. And for me, Mathieu Perreault, when the time comes for the salary cap that Mathieu Perreault is tough to fit in, then act at that point in time. When you're talking about next year being such an absolutely critical year for the Winnipeg Jets, a guy like Mathieu Perreault could pay off tenfold, having a guy that can go up and down, wing or center. To me, a super big risk to not have Perreault next year.
Yeah, I have his contract being a problem after this coming season.
Yeah. Which it probably will be. Right? Like it probably will be, but when this year is so critical, I mean, I think people kind of gloss over the fact that he had 45 points this past season, missing a. Now the injury concerns are his biggest knock. I'm not going to argue that, but to put up 45,
he's a half a point or 0.6 points a game guy. Wicks.
He was a 0.6 last year, and that's first line offense in today's NHL. If he played all 82 and continued to score at the rate that he was at, he would have had 50-plus points, and that puts you well into first-line category. So I feel like his contributions get glossed over by the fact that he's small and he unfortunately been injured the past few years.
Yeah, and back to the point of the mayor of Calgary, it's a different era. That's the one thing about these new arena deals is it's not just like, well, the arena's old, so it's time to build a new one in every market. Every market is different, and the timing of when you need these is different as well, in my opinion. And I think that's a big factor that's going in to the thing in Calgary right now as well. Boss Pizza Fan Line 780-1290. Should we take a break? Do we have time for one more? We'll take a break and we'll get to the next call when we come back on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to be a media sponsor of the 2017 Canada Summer Games, July 28th to August 13th. 16 sports, 250 events. The 50th anniversary of the Canada Summer Games will welcome over 20,000 visitors. You can help paint the town red, yellow, and orange every Friday as well until July 21st, where your official 2017 Canada Summer Games clothing. Take a picture of yourself and share the photo using the handle at 2017 Canada Games and the hashtag GearUp for a chance to win a VRL promotional travel credit as well. Visit canadagames.ca/2017 for more information about Game Gear Fridays. To stay up to date on event details, ticket offers, and more, including the entertainment lineup for the opening and closing ceremonies, visit 2017canadagames.ca or tsn1290.ca. The Big Show on TSN 1290. Jim, Troy, and Brandon, and your calls on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Kevin, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I'd like to just touch on the NHL draft. Shuttle day off, trade up.
Sorry, Kevin, you're cutting out there. Can you try that again?
reason why I say that is that on the trade base, I guess Jonas Brodin is high up there, and I think that we could trade that pick for Jonas Brodin because, you know, he's only 23. He's got 4 years left on his contract, so you're still keeping him long-term. Because if you do draft a left-handed defenseman, you know, what the Jets have tended to do is develop, you know, the players in the minors for 2 to 3 years. So if he is in the minors for that long, who fills that gap in the left-handed side for those 3 years? I don't think Brennan Kitchen or Brian Streit is going to fill that void.
Yeah, I think you do both. I think you draft one and you make a trade for one. If he's there at the draft. Like, and I understand if you're going to use that pick to go get somebody, I see what you're saying. I don't have a problem with either of those scenarios.
You don't need to, like, to me, when you're talking 2, 3, 4 years, possibly a development for a guy you're going to draft here as a defenseman, there's no reason to emphasize left over right. If you want to increase your stable at defense, I mean, how old is Dustin Byfuglien going to be in 3, 4 years? You know, you might need a right side D by then as much as you need a left side guy.
Like, I would prefer, Kevin, if the team, or if I was a team, I would trade one of my young prospects that I'm rich at, like center or something like that, for a left-handed D. And then if there's one there at the first pick I would draft, I wouldn't trade the pick necessarily to get that. I think you have other assets to get that.
Right, because I think, you know, the Jets, don't we have, like, the deepest, I guess, forward prospect pool in the NHL?
Yeah, that's what
there's
I mean.
A lot of
like,
people say, yeah.
Like there, and there's just specifically at center, like forwards, you never know who's going to pan out and what all that. And same with centers, but you have so many centers, there's just not enough room.
Right. And we do, who's at our projected pick? It was a left handed defenseman, wasn't it?
Who's what, sorry?
I guess on the draft board, who our projected pick would be. Because I believe Calfoot was 14th overall projected, and then our pick would be, I think it was a left-handed defenseman.
Yeah, it's 13th overall is Pierre-Olivier Joseph, a defenseman from Charlottetown in the Quebec Junior Major League. 6'2", 161, left-handed shot, 39 points in 62 games.
Right.
Get that guy up to a buffet.
That's the 13th ranking anyway.
6'2", 161.
That's like me in the 7th
grade.
Holy
smackers.
All right, guys, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks, care, Kevin. We appreciate the call for sure. What are you guys' thoughts on that?
On what?
161?
Not the 161.
That's one of my legs.
For a forward, that's one thing.
That's what I weighed in the third grade.
You better be lightning quick with the puck moving when you're 161.
Just the thought of trading that pick for...
Heck yeah. You do.
A guy like Brodin on a four-year deal still. And
they have to go get... Right there with going to get a veteran goaltender to complement Connor Hellebuyck this year is getting a top four left side D. You do whatever it takes to get that right here.
Yeah, not necessarily Brodin for me, but I have absolutely no problem with him moving that pick. And not only that, but be aggressive. Like kind of send a message to the team and to the players and get them jacked up a little bit that we're really going for it this year.
And this is the kind of move, because of the dire necessity of filling this, that an overpay for me is fine and dandy. You go fill the need and the void that exists here.
Ken Harrison won our tickets to tonight's friendly between Team Canada and Costa Rica at IGF for the Women's International Soccer Competition. Congratulations, Ken. And we have 2 tickets to give away to the Nitro Circus Friday at IGF tomorrow night. 780-1290, the 12th caller through will get that. We'll be back tomorrow morning to discuss Game 5. Once again, you two are going Penguins. I'm going Predators. Is that right?
Yep.
I guess so.
Brandon, in your own defense, has said several times he has no clue what's going to happen, but he took the Preds, or the Penguins, I'll say. We'll discuss that, tee up a game 4 in the NBA Finals, talk about a busy weekend in sports as well. Much to come on tomorrow's show. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we thank you for listening, and the Big Show will be back at 6 a.m. tomorrow on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.